come to our meeting and have people take their seats so we can begin. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for being here. Would you please stand? And we'd like to welcome everyone here this afternoon. And we'll start with acknowledging that we have a quorum. All our members are here. And item two on our agenda this afternoon is special reports. And is Captain Taylor here today? From yes, there he is. Captain Taylor, if you would start with the
Commander.
Pardon.
Oh, I'll answer anything.
Yeah. Just call you for dinner, right?
Call me for dinner.
Okay, sorry. Commander Taylor, if you would give us your sheriff's report today.
All right. Just to start off, I thought I would report to you that I had observed the Coast Union High School, their wildland fire evacuation drill this morning. The alarms sounded at 8:45 at the high school, and by 8:55, the staff, and it could have possibly gone off. They did learn some things, but I just wanted to let you know that, and anybody that's viewing this at home that has children that are at that school, that school and the staff that are there are taking the safety very seriously, particularly for the wildland fires, and they're going to be holding further drills at the elementary schools in coming weeks. And one other thing I wanted to do was just to kind of commend the bus driver for bus number six, a gentleman by the name of Rudy Metal. I was impressed with this gentleman because when we got to the termination point, he actually gave a 10-minute safety briefing to these kids, and he talked about how to activate the emergency brake if the driver were unconscious. He talked about the two-way radio, how to operate it and ask for help if something happened to the bus driver or if the bus were involved in a collision. He went over each of the emergency exits and explained how they operated and how they would get themselves out of the bus. He talked about exiting with traffic on either side of the bus. He even talked about if the bus were in a collision or stalled on a railroad track and it looked like a train was coming, how to get out of the bus and safely move away. And I'll tell you, it seems kind of silly to be my age and of experience level and learn something from the bus driver, and that was, if you have to evacuate from the bus because the train's going to strike it, you actually run away from the bus and towards the train. And it seems perfectly logical when you think about it, because the bus is going that way. Why would you run away from the train? The bus is going to take you out. But it's something that I and several of the other staff members kind of looked at each other like, I didn't know that. And this was the kind of information this guy was taking the time to impart on the kids, and I just thought, somebody ought to recognize him for it, so I wanted to mention him here today that I was really impressed with him and his performance. As for the Sheriff's Office report, for the period between August 27th and September, vehicle code violations, we had 4 pedestrian contacts, 12 alarm calls for both audible and motion sensor residential alarms. 5 of those alarm calls, 5 of the 12 were businesses and 8 were residential. We didn't have any thefts or property damage occur. We conducted 8-foot patrols of the creeks and canyon areas looking for illegal encampments. There were 17 disturbing the peace calls. They ranged from loud music to neighbors arguing. We had 1 vandalism. A victim reported that his ex-girlfriend damaged the paint job on his motorcycle while it was parked in the 2600 block of Main Street. We had 3 arrests for domestic violence. On September 6th, we had a female report to deputies that her ex-boyfriend had hit her in the face when she told him that she was ending their dating relationship. The victim said that she later saw the suspect driving past her parents' home very slowly on several occasions. And then she received, left on her front door stoop, a Get Well Soon card from the suspect. Following the investigation, the deputies located the suspect. They interviewed him, and then they arrested him for domestic battery. On September 17th, deputies were sent to investigate a call of a woman shouting for help. Upon arriving at the scene, the deputies discovered that an incident of domestic violence had occurred. The victim, who was the husband in this case, reported that he and his wife had been arguing earlier. The husband had left and gone to a local felony spousal abuse. On September 20th, the deputies were sent to a disturbance call, and upon their arrival, they found a female and her children standing in the street outside their residence. Female said that her husband was inside the house that he was drunk, and that when she had tried to leave the residence, he had refused to allow her to leave and actually held her there against her will. She finally managed to muscle her way around him and get outside the residence. The commotion is what reports. That's a decline from the last two reporting periods. Those included two more incidents of gasoline being siphoned from parked cars in the 2900 block of Village Lane. We had two reports of shoplifting from local businesses and mail stolen from an unlocked car in the 2000 block of Pitt Lane. We had four burglaries. One was to a room at the Cambria Pines Lodge. The hotel has stepped up their security, and they believe they had photos of the suspect. The investigation is ongoing to try and identify him. We had a burglary to a locked car at the 7200 block of Moonstone Beach Drive. The suspect stole the victim's laptop. Burglary to a locked C-Train container in the 800 block of Main Street. The suspect stole a generator and some other items, too. So we're investigating that to see if we can determine who accessed it and stole the items. We had one stolen vehicle that was recovered. That was on August 28th at 3:45 in the morning. Deputies saw a suspicious vehicle on Highway 1 at Pico Avenue in San Simeon. They stopped the vehicle. It was a 1994 Toyota truck, and they determined it had been stolen from Templeton earlier in the day. They arrested a John Jeffrey Hosford, 49 years of age, a resident of Cambria, and a Jared Crockrum, 27 years of age, a transient who's previously been contacted living in the illegal encampments there in Fern Canyon and also in Santa Rosa Creek. Stolen vehicle was recovered and returned to its owner. We had a second stolen vehicle that was recovered. That was on August 30th. Deputies responded to a call of a suspicious vehicle in Iucas. Deputies arrested Spencer Castle, 30 years of age, a transient, and booked him for auto theft, possession of narcotics, and drug paraphernalia. The sheriff's detective served one narcotic search warrant on a 120-acre property on Curdy Creek Road. Property was occupied by a number of tents and trailers, and during the search, the detectives found methamphetamine, heroin, and narcotics paraphernalia used for injecting drugs in one of the tents, which belonged to a Stacy Guglielmelli, 27 years of age, identified as a transient. She was booked by detectives for possession of narcotics. Finally, through a cooperative agreement between the Land Conservancy, the Cambria CSD, and the Sheriff's Office, we sent deputies up with inmate work crews from the county jail, and they cleaned up several abandoned homeless encampments from the land east of Highway 1 and south of Santa Rosa Creek. So we're trying to pitch in as much as we can to help, because we know money's tight for everybody, and it's sort of a community problem rather than just any one person's problem. So we're happy to pitch in, and we'll be looking for other ways we can help with the cleanup as they continue. And that's the report. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from anyone? I do have a couple of reports are becoming longer.
Hmm?
And that, in some cases, is a good thing. In other cases, it causes concern.
Right.
So I was wondering, just from month to month, maybe next month, if you could give us a little bit of information on a month-to-month number of reports that you receive. I think we would be interested in that.
Okay.
Okay?
Very good.
Thank you very much for your report. And next, on special reports from our fire department report, we have Chief Xiaohu, who has returned, and we're happy to see you, and we'll be giving the report today.
Good afternoon, Madam President and Directors of the Board. Eric Xiaohu, Interim CCSD Fire Chief. As we all know, I want to talk a little bit about the unprecedented fire season and what's happened this past month with the big fires. Last week, there were over 4,000 firefighters fighting the Valley and the Butte Fire up north. Many structures were destroyed, and people's lives were forever changed. Damage assessment still going on even today, even though it's the fire started almost a month ago. What we have all done as governing agencies to come together to make sure that our folks do have defendable space. Between our LE 100 program and our weed abatement program. It was pretty obvious that in some of the areas where the fire struck, their weed abatement program and LE 100 programs weren't as successful. They were in the back country, and it was made it really, really difficult for us to access or even get back there, and I think that's what contributed to a lot of the home losses and even some of the deaths that occurred. So again, the reason why I bring this up is we're doing a good thing. We need to continue what we're doing together to ensure that all of our folks have the best chance if fire were to hit us, to have our egress routes, you know, with our CERT programs, and all of us coming together to make sure that we have the best chance of getting everybody out safely and giving us, the firefighters, the best chance to defend structures in our community. The other thing I want to just hit on for 1 second is I realize I haven't physically been here due to being on fires and such, but I wanted to let everybody know that behind the scenes there's a lot of work going on. I was a big part of the SAFER grant and bringing that back up and providing you folks the information with that. And then we also had a process that we had to go through to hire behind Captain Bitto, whose last day was today, which we'll find out shortly here, to hire behind a lot of conference calls and telephone calls and such. So here at home, what's occurred is we had a fire, the Summit Fire, on September 20th. As we probably all know, it was a 25-acre fire. It was about it was in some brush. There were about 9 roadside spots for over 6 miles. They merged into 2 large spot fires. Your engine and your water tender responded to the fire with our CAL FIRE folks and other local government agencies to keep that fire small, so we should be proud of them. Also, the Cuesta Vegetation Fire, the water tender spent a little over 24 hours on that fire. We're seeking reimbursement for that, and it was good to have them. We are definitely short water tenders in this unit, and they contribute to a big part of that, probably within the next couple of days. And then lastly, or actually the SAFER grant, as we know, we're working on that to amend that from the 3 firefighters to 2 firefighters. We're still working on that, Chief Lewin and I. And then lastly, on September 3rd, Lois Capps visited Cambria with President Robinette, and we met at the fire station, and we showed her the video, the aerial video that Mark Miller basically spoke on there. And there were lots of good discussions on how we can get federal grant money. And then from there, we took her in a van, a CAL FIRE van, and showed her firsthand what's happening to the forest and why it's so important. So I think that
Shirley Bianchi was there. Also, Dan from the County Fire Focus. And again, with the thing that we pursue often, looking for possible, in this particular case, federal funding that could help with some of our ongoing tree removal. And they visited a residence where defensible space is significantly in place. And hopefully that will come to be for Cambria to receive some additional funding, too. So thank you.
Thank you.
Director Reith?
I have a question for the general manager. We just heard a couple of reports about emergency responses and disaster. We have a disaster or emergency response policy for the district on the water side. If something like a fire were to happen, we have a protocol for what should happen, and do our water guys know what they should do in that situation? Like, I'm just trying to make sure that we have, and if we don't, we need to be probably working on one.
It needs to be refined and updated, just like any policy, and that'll be part of the local hazard mitigation plan.
It will be. Okay.
That the chief was able to secure for the district. I don't know if the board knew that, but that was about $30,000. So we're moving forward with that. And within that local hazard mitigation plan, it addresses multiple scenarios, not just within the fire department, but also water, wastewater, admin, and all those. So it'll be a very comprehensive plan. The guys in the field and the fire department work really well together. They know what to do. They communicate well together. However, a formal plan that needs to be updated and visited periodically is a much better way to go for us. And even as Chief Miller used to do, the tabletop exercises and things like that, using different scenarios. And it has to be a living, breathing document. It should not just, like anything else, sit on a shelf. It should involve the community and the fire department and all the different departments within our agency. So the answer to that is Yes, they work well together. Is there a formal plan? There is, but it probably needs to be updated, and that would be addressed to the local hazard mitigation plan.
And what about a policy on disaster recovery? And we have some money, a little tiny bit, in the bank, but not as much as we used to have. But so do we have a plan for what? How do we set the priorities and get started on getting things back online and that kind of thing?
Well, remember, the emphasis behind the local hazard mitigation plan is to be eligible for FEMA funding.
For an emergency.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on the magnitude of the disaster and how it is declared by the county, how it's declared by the state. And as you know, the fires that the chief was referring to now have the federal government's involvement. President Obama has indicated that because of the magnitude of the fire, that there'll be federal aid available. So it really depends on the incident itself and what impact it has locally on the community, but also on the entire region. So,
thank you. I just think maybe that's something that we need to look at going forward when we aren't so busy with 18,000 other things, of course, but you never know when you're in an emergency and when you have to recover. You know, you want to be able to set those priorities when you're not in a panic and not in a situation where it's dire.
And the key is not to exhaust your own limited resources, whether it's personnel or funds. When a disaster hits, you want to be able to look to the county, to the state, or to the federal government to help you rebuild whatever needs to be rebuilt, whether it's the personal homes of people or our infrastructure.
And as we know, the money doesn't come right away. So
it doesn't.
We need to be prepared for that eventuality, you know.
Okay. And we have also on item 2B one request for public comment. Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, President Robinette. Tina Dickinson, Cambria. Any structure? I'd like to have that answered. I think that's something that hasn't been addressed by with all homeowners. I mean, I just can't believe, quite frankly, how much foliage and trees and all kinds of things are growing closer to a structure that again would be problematic with a fire. And then I purposely did not attend the fire meetings that were going on with Director Clift and Director Thompson because I don't think there was anything really that was defined that I felt my presence was worthwhile. But what I do is I dig in to get information. So I got the mutual aid response for CAL FIRE for all of 2014. This is for every call that they went out on for Cambria. They also have graphs of station incident summary. This was all for all of 2014. The total calls, which were 899. And if you compare those to the CCSD's numbers, they're practically the same. And so this information is on CAL FIRE's website. And to think that they are not responding, as some allude, I would suggest they do their homework, if they haven't, and check it out, because these guys are actually doing quite an amazing job. I praise them for it, and I just wanted to...
can enforce up to 100 feet, depending on the topography. So, for instance, if there's a hillside or a drainage that shoots up towards the house, we can enforce up to 100 feet. I hope that helps.
I would say, too, Director Thompson and I did go with the team that was doing the every residence inspections, too, for the defensible space. And I think by now, in fact, that probably every home has been visited. And if they've had anything that was actually a threat to the home, to the neighborhood, I believe that they were notified of that, too. I learned quite a bit. There's a lot to do with limbing up trees and how high it goes and the percentage and the height of the tree and then the percentage limbed up. It has an awful lot to do, too, with the dead and dying brush or shrubs that are there. are the ones that they were asking for them to.
Laming of trees and clearing the brush underneath is a big part of that.
Thank you. Vice President Cliff?
Let me clarify, because when you say defensible space doesn't mean clear space 30 feet away from every house.
Of vegetation, that's of dead, dying vegetation.
Dead and dying.
Yeah, so we do encourage. Yeah.
But what I don't want to see is everybody go out there and doze, a disc 30 feet around their house and wipe everything out. That's the impression that.
Okay. Yes, sir. So, and there are brochures that we have at the fire stations that tell you, we actually encourage people to plant.
Three. Acknowledgments and presentations, and we are going to change the order to go in this order now. Our first presentation today will be the proclamation for Fire Captain Stephen Bitto. The second report will be from the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve with the Executive Director. Joe Ellen will be here to do that. And then the third report. The third report will be the report from Dean Flores, an update to the board. And I'm sorry that somehow the CERT team leader, Craig Uferheide, was put on here because we have met and talked about the presentation he's going to share, and he is out of the country right now, and this will be then in October. So, without further delay and ado, it is my pleasure, and I have also asked Director Rice to join me in this. So, Director Rice, let's see. I think why don't we move this around this way so we can kind of all face each other here. We'll start with Director Rice. I need to start the top, too.
District proclamation honoring Fire Captain Steve Bitto for 33 years of exemplary service. Whereas Fire Captain Steve Bitto began his distinguished fire service career in 1983 with the San Luis Obispo County Fire Department, where he served the community of Cambria as a volunteer, and whereas Captain Steve Bitto was hired full-time by the Cambria Fire Department in 1990 and worked in the positions of firefighter, engineer, fire captain, North Coast Ocean Rescue Team Coordinator, Fire Prevention Officer, Arson Investigator, Public Education Officer, Department of Motor Vehicles Class B License Instructor, and Water Rescue Instructor, and faithfully served them for 26 years. And whereas Steve Bitto created the North Coast Ocean Rescue Team in 1984 and has coordinated this team of dedicated ocean rescue members for 21 years, whereas Captain Steve Bitto received his emergency medical technician licensure in 1977 and has worked and maintained that ability for 38 years. And whereas in 1997, Captain Steve Bitto collaborated with the San Luis Obispo County to develop the Coastal Response Plan and the Fire Investigation Strike Team, SLOFIST, and...
And continuing, whereas Captain Bitto has been a countywide leader in fire and ocean rescue services, has worked tirelessly to understand the needs of the community and how the Cambria Fire Department can best meet these needs and make Cambria Community Service Fire District Department a leader in fire service, and whereas Captain Steve Bitto has demonstrated throughout his career a sense of deep responsibility, commitment, dedication, pride, and integrity for the Cambria Community Services District Fire Department. And whereas the Cambria Community Services District Fire Department, and now, therefore, by virtue of the authority and me as president, and on behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of the Community Services Fire District, Cambria Community Services District, I hereby extend to Fire Captain Steve Bitto on this 24th day of September our sincere appreciation, commendation for the manner in which he has performed his duties at the Cambria Community Services District Fire Department, with special thanks for his professionalism, dedication to service, and kindness to the members of the public. It is indeed my pleasure to present you with this. It is my pleasure to present to you Captain Stephen Bitto.
Well, first, two things. I can't believe that all fit on this thing here. And I already forgot what the second one was. So, oh, I know. When have I not had something to say, you know? So I'm just going to read this. It'll be a little easier for me to probably do. So I just wanted to say how proud and honored to have worked for and with the citizens of Cambria and the surrounding area for all these years. During my career, I've been on more calls than I can count. Structure fires, wireland fires, traffic accidents, surf rescues, cliff rescues, medical aids, gas leaks, trees down on power lines, on cars, on houses, and even on people. Lots of animal calls. We've had just a ton of animal calls in my career. Cows on Highway 1, bulls loose on Lodge Hill, bats in houses, cats in trees, cats in wells, cats on roofs, and cats underneath houses. And we even had some iguanas running loose. And I had to really think about that. First, you need to love the job. And second, you need to have good training and be able to trust yourself. Thirdly, you need good people to work with, our fire family. And you need, and we have a great fire family here. We learn to trust each other. We have each other's back. I'm not going on that one.
Was that planned?
We have a great family here. We've learned to trust each other. We have each other's back. We train together. We eat together, share the firehouse for days on end at a time. We laugh together, and sometimes we cry together. Those men and women in blue in the back, very special people. They come in all shapes and sizes. You can see it. Young, and some not so young anymore. Blair, where you at? Okay. And they wear many different patches. Doesn't seem to matter. But they all have one thing in common. They have an unrelenting commitment to helping others in need. They are the people I'm going to miss the most. But the most important reason I was successful in this job is my family, the love and support of my wife, Cindy, and our daughters, Amy and Kate. This is Cindy and Kate. Our daughter Amy couldn't be here. She's in RN school in Reno, so the apple doesn't fall far from the tree sometimes. So let's see. So our my family and my girls, and so they've allowed me to keep going when times got tough. They understood that it was much more than a job for me, and it was part of all of our lives. It turned to all of our lives. So. I've worked for 5 general managers, 6 fire chiefs, and 12 different boards with many different board members. I've spent 26 years with CCSD. Currently, the only thing that has been in the district longer is one of our fire engines up at the station. I'm not kidding. It has been my honor to be a firefighter in Cambria, dedicated to the well-being of our community. Thank you. I think we're just going to gracefully go exit. So.
Well, before you go, Kathy, could we also get a picture with Captain Bitto with the entire board? We would like that. We're going to go get a picture. Okay. Wow. Moving to our next presentation on item three, we're going to have we will have Jo Ellen is going to be presenting for the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. So welcome. Quite a bit to follow there, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if I can do this.
Let's see, we don't have the sound on the... did
there.
You push the green light? Oh, okay.
Thank you, President Robinette, for the instructions. And thank you for allowing me to be here today, and thank you, Board. Originally, this was supposed to be a presentation on the minor use permit for the forest test plots that we wanted to do on the ranch. And that application has been put on informational hold until we get some more information for the county. And Holly Slatland will be presenting that next CCSD board meeting in October. So I'm not going to do much to cover that. She has the full presentation on it. But I will talk about some of the other things that have been going on and will be going on the ranch. First of all, as always, I want to start off with our great Wednesday weeder team doing invasive removals every single Wednesday from 8 till 10 in the morning. They've had quite a job keeping up with the thistles and mustard and radish this year, and they're staying one step ahead, which we can all be thankful for. And most recently, they just cut the flower heads and didn't completely remove some pampas grass that we were actually pretty unaware of on the ranch. It had been on the bluff restoration, you've probably noticed the barriers on the north end of the bluff trail. We're trying to keep people off of the bare dirt areas and away from that first high cliff for people's safety. And we hope it rains. And before, when it does start raining, we're going to plant those bare dirt areas with native seeds and see if we can restore them to their original glory. Although some of them have been bare since we bought the ranch. It's not just the increased use from walkers. We did coastal cleanup day, and normally we hardly find anything on the ranch. This year we included Abalone Cove, which I found out it's called from Google Maps. We've always called it Peggy's Cove because we get to it from Peggy Christensen's stairs. And we came out with 10 pounds of trash, which is amazing for the ranch, and 2 pounds of recyclables. One of the problems we're having, and we noticed it with the coastal cleanup, is cigarette butts. There is not supposed to be smoking on the ranch, and I just would like to alert people, please don't smoke on the ranch. It's dangerous for the ranch, and don't leave your cigarette butts. The next thing coming up for us is our conservation easement monitoring. We do this every year. It's a yearly resource survey to determine and document compliance with the conservation easement. We take photographs and write descriptions of more than 50 GPS points on the ranch and compare them with previous years and kind of see how our management plan is going and see what we need to address next. And that is about a 50-page booklet, and we give a copy to Carlos at CCSD, and it's available there, or you can come look at it at our office as well. We've been doing it since 2003 when we did the initial study on the ranch, and we have copies of all of those monitoring reports. Coming up is the 4th annual California Conservation Corps Volunteer Day on Saturday, October 17th. And this day is a special one for us. It's hundreds of volunteers, hundreds of businesses, and thousands of Corps members come out on this day to benefit a community with what they feel is a really worthwhile project. And this year, the ranch was chosen to be the beneficiary of the Conservation Corps. And the volunteer day will last about 4 hours. It starts about 8 o'clock, but you might need to check back on our website on that. Jimmy Galvin is out of town right now, and he's the coordinator for this. He's also a new resident of Cambria, and that might be part of why this project was chosen this year. We thank him. We will be doing trail repair work on the Santa Rosa Creek Trail, erosion control and repair on a trail near the North Windsor entrance. The little curvy one that goes up into that first crop of trees has been a problem for a while now, and we'll be repairing that. We'll be doing chipping of downed wood along the forest trail, ice plant removal of the ranch, and it's gotten to the point that it's dangerous. Carlos and his crew have gotten the materials together for that, some of which is down trees from the forest that were hazardous trees that were taken down. And so we're hoping to be able to do that project on that day as well. I'm going to give a plug to the Conservation Corps here. I hope that's okay. They've helped us on so many projects and the entire community. They built the Bluff Trail on the ranch, and among other things. California Conservation Corps was created in 1976, and since then, 120,000 Corps members have provided more than 67 million hours of conservation work, planting more than 21 million trees, improving stream and fish habitats, building and maintaining more than 11,000 miles of trails, and improving California park and recreation areas. Looking at the general health of trees in the forest, and Holly Sletland, our projects manager, will be leading that effort. It'll be from 10 to 2 p.m., and if you're interested in helping, you can call Holly at 239-3928. And then lastly, I wanted to let you know that our office has been open for a little over a year now, and we have people coming in all the time, and we have people calling, which is wonderful. We really depend on the community to be our eyes and ears on the ranch. It's wonderful when people call us and tell us about a problem or tell us about something wonderful they saw. Our office is at 604 D Main Street. It's right next to Sandy's Deli, and volunteers keep the office open right now only Mondays and Saturdays from 11 till 3 and Fridays from 11 till 2. We're open at other times depending on when I'm at meetings or doing other projects. But so it's always good to call first. And the number there is 927-2856. And I also want to pass on our email, which is ffrpcambria@sbcglobal.net. And our website, which is ffrpcambria.org. And most everything I've talked about is going to be on our website. But I thought I would come and just kind of update you in person as well. So thank you for the opportunity. And do you have any questions?
I have a couple of comments.
Okay.
And we may have questions, too. I just have to tell you, what a wonderful partnership we have, of course, in our community ranch, in this ranch. It is, of course, a partnership with the CSD, with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, as the conservation easement holder, and with PROS. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you,
information for folks that want to be involved on the 17th, which is the California Conservation Corps Volunteer Day, right?
On that one, she's not exactly in charge of it, so probably it would be best
contact
to call the office.
Call the office. So what is the
number
again
there? And
that is
927-2856. And that workday will be followed. I forgot to mention this. It will be followed by a lunch at the VFW dining room in back of the Vets Hall here today, and the Conservation Corps will be providing that lunch for all the volunteers.
So call the office.
The office,
okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah.
Yes, Director Thompson?
Yeah, I just want to comment. I have the pleasure of representing the board on the at the FFRP meetings, and it is really a wonderful group. There's some very dedicated individuals that are part of that board. They're the ones that repair the benches on the ranch. They clean the trails. They do all the other good
things. We have a presentation that General Manager Gruber is going to make on behalf of Dean Flores.
Thank you, Madam President, and board members. And Senator Flores apologizes. He missed his plane this morning. I got a call from him early, and he was panicking. And he said, Jerry, if you want me to rent a car and drive up, I will. And I said, no, I don't think that's necessary. Just summarize for me some things. So August and September highlights from balanced public relations. Senator Flores, again, our representative, continues to meet with 10 Coastal Commission meetings and specifically engaging Coastal Commissioners regarding the Cambria's regular coastal development permit. He also is attended meetings in the governor's office with their staff to discuss the bond proceeds and the Proposition 1A. Just to remind every grade, if you recall, the SR1 and SR3 wells and the Filtronics plant, Bob and I were making numerous phone calls, and we weren't seem to get in our phone calls returned. And Dean intervened, and I'll let Patrick touch on this a little bit later, but that $250,000 is, as they say, the check's in the mail. So that's kind of good. Senator Flores has also been working with me and district council and staff and the county on the indemnification agreement that the board authorized me to enter into and work with the county on that. He's also been engaged in conversations with DWR regarding our groundwater basin management plan, and also working directly with DWR. An update with that a little bit later in the status of that as a separate agenda item. The upcoming events that Senator Flores has is dinner with Coastal Commissioners in Long Beach on October 6th through the 9th. A target date he's working on that for is October 7th. He plans on, we've reached out to state parks on several issues, one being the EWS and also right of entry permits regarding the EWS and some of our adaptive management plan sampling that we want to put in place or that we have put in place. He's been helpful in facilitating those meetings, and he's also reached out to Senator Monning and wants is coordinating a tour of our EWS. Regarding state bonds and the recycled water presentation, he's working with the state on that again. So Dean Flores apologizes for not being here, but he wants the board to know, staff and the community, that he's actively involved in our best interests as a community. He's going well above and beyond the scope of his work and puts in countless hours for us, calls me before I'm up, calls me after I go to bed, calls me on weekends. And so it's good to know that he's there for us. And again, he extends his warmest regards and that he'll plans on being here in October.
And thank you for that update. Okay, we're moving to, did you have any comments? Director Rice?
This is the second month in a row that he hasn't been here. We're having financial issues, and his cost is very high. It would be nice if we could at least get a written report of the dates and who he met with so we have an idea, because heaven forbid we all get on a plane that goes down. Nobody would know where what we'd already accomplished and who we'd already talked to. So it would be very good, and as a board member, as we continue to pay this person who is valuable, hopefully, in getting us where we need to be. We also haven't really had that full discussion about what is he saying on behalf of Cambria. Of course, he's working in our best interest, but I don't think we've ever defined that, and we had a brief discussion about doing so, and yet we still have not yet done that about what it is, because he is going above and beyond, and we want to make sure that the message that's going out, at least the board is aware of what is the message that he's giving the folks that he's talking to.
because, I mean, I know he's working in the best interest of Cambria and he's working with our staff, but I would like to know more specifically what that message actually is so that I can feel more comfortable about what's happening and have a report on the date and who he met with and whether or not there were, our staff was there or not. I think it would just be at the minimum for accountability purposes. I mean, if he's worth his money, then we should be able to point to something for the community to say that.
Thank you. Okay. Now, moving on to item 4, agenda review. Do we have any items on the consent agenda that we want pulled? Anyone to be pulled today? All right. We will do that then. Item C. Okay. And so then we're into item number 5, public comment. And that, of course, is limited to 3 minutes for each person. And our first person that signed up today for public comment under item 5 is Bill New.
Uh-oh. Thank you, President Robinette and the board. I had knee surgery yesterday, so I'm not 100% right now, but I felt it was very important that I be here today. I have copies of this, and we'll give it to Monique when I'm done. But I'd like to read it also to all the citizens in our community that are watching TV that can't be here. I believe that I have a very simple solution to our problems with the Cambria Fire Department. The following steps will ensure public safety and the best possible service to our community in all aspects the Cambria Fire Department is responsible to ensure. First and foremost, the Cambria Fire Department to be a standalone fire protection district. The following will take effect. All monies due the Cambria Fire Department from property taxes will be spent only on the fire department. All personnel issues such as negotiations, promotions, hiring, and discipline will cease. The department will have its own elected board of directors that will allow them to concentrate ability of misinformation being sent through the general manager. As a retired fire chief of the Rescue Fire Protection District, I know this system works, benefiting all systems and employees. Please take this into consideration as a solution to your issues with the Cambria Fire Department. Sincerely, William E. Canoop. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here every single month. When we hired a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., Greg, I can't remember his last name, but we demanded that we had a written report. We weren't getting them initially, and we demanded that, and we got it. Just throw out that he's met with whoever he has met with, or that he's going to a Coastal Commission meeting, tells us nothing for the 10,000 probably that we are being charged, if not more than that, a month. I really resent this. This is not the way to do business, and I am speaking to the general manager who's busy having a conversation. These comments are reflecting upon you and your job here, Mr. General Manager.
As you know, address the president.
Yes, but I think I deserve the respect.
I'm going to ask you with respect and regard. Please address me.
And I should have the respect comment of the general manager at a board meeting for the public.
I'm sure you do. Now, can we go forward?
Yes, we can. In last month's staff packet, the general manager had 17 cost-cutting items to be considered by the board. I questioned a number of them. Number two, he said, what would continue? So the Land Watch lawsuit has prevailed thus far. We've not heard a word from you. It's not on the website. But what we do get is a CalCoast News Facebook response to a report from CalCoast News that went directly to Facebook, and I addressed that to all of you. It has since appeared on your website. So the lack of transparency, unfortunately, rests when we don't get the answers or information that we should have, rests with the public to bring it to you. That is shocking. It is disgraceful. I am sick of it. And anybody that wants to raise a penny or a dime to support this district must be out of their mind, because it's giving good money to go after bad. This board, this management plan, and then we try to scoot by with a 1980 San Simeon Basin plan. It is not good enough. You have got to realize that we are not being led properly and in the way Cambrians deserve. So wake up, Cambrians. This is a message to you, because I can't get through to the board or the staff when I get up here. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. I'm again going to ask, if we're going to applaud, great. Make sure you applaud for everyone who speaks. Everyone here, I want to hear from, we all do. But if we can't do that and be courteous to each person, I would prefer that we don't applaud for any reception. I appreciate that. Thank you. Next up, we have on, let's see, we have Jerry Wood, item 5.
Thank you, Madam President and Board. I'll just read this to make sure I get it all right. During the ad hoc committee for fire protection meetings, the committee members made a statement that we need to know how many citizens of Cambria feel about the possibility of contracting our fire protection with CAL FIRE. Since many citizens are unable to attend the ad hoc meetings and are also unable to attend the CCSD board meetings, we have taken it on ourselves to circulate an informational petition to obtain the feelings of the citizens. This petition reads, "We, the undersigned citizens of Cambria, desire to clearly advise the Cambria Community Services District, CCSD, general manager, and the elected board of directors that it is our choice to retain our Cambria CSD Fire Department under total local operation and control and not enter into any type of contract or agreement with CAL FIRE to manage or operate our Cambria CSD Fire Department. From the voter numbers that I received from SLO County Registrar's Office for the November 4th, 2014 CCSD election, the results are as follows. In approximately 2 weeks of our effort to get signatures, we have collected 235 to this date of the citizens of Cambria and two supplemental questionnaires. This number represents 3.9% of the total population of Cambria. For the registered voters, it was 5.9%, and for the more importantly...
Okay, next on item 5, we have Bob Putney.
Good afternoon, Madam President, members of the board and staff. I would like to ask you to consider two things today. One is, for the last four or five agendas under the staff reports, under fire you have CAL FIRE report. CAL FIRE is a contractor that you hired to run the Cambria Community Services District Fire Department. If I was the men in blue sitting in back or Captain Bitto today, I would feel a little put asunder that our fire department is not being recognized for the services that they provide. They're still out there on the front lines protecting us. And although I did not get to hear Chief Shalhoub's report, I noticed in his report he didn't say that your water tender, your firefighters, and your engine company with firefighters were part of the initial attack that put out the fire on Highway 46 West. Oh, good. Great. I missed that. So I'm glad he mentioned that. But those are the kind of things I would expect to be in here, because the second thing I wanted to bring up to you is that our firefighters need to know that the community and you support them. And if it says CAL FIRE report, it makes it sound like they're doing all the work and our people are not being recognized. And a little recognition goes a long way with our public safety people. So I would ask you to consider that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And next on item 5, Mary Webb.
Good afternoon, Board. I wasn't in town yesterday, but my husband said that he watched, I think it was a Board of Supervisors meeting, where several water districts in the county were securing their allocations of water from Lake Nacimiento. So they were signing letters of intent with the, I don't know if it was for Board of Supervisors to approve it, but anyway, they're signing their letters of intent to make sure that they have their actual allocations from Lake Nacimiento. And I think I emailed you several years ago wondering if we actually have, Cambria has anything in writing that we still have a 1,200 acre foot a year allocation from Lake Nacimiento. There's a lot of discussions that are happening now with water, but the water wheeling that can happen just with water storage and some of these reservoirs with fresh water, we need to make sure that we are still in line for our allocation. And so I just want to make sure you're aware of that. Templeton made their application, San Luis Obispo City, Atascadero Mutual Water Supply Company, and I think the city of San Luis Obispo. The other thing is with the lawsuit, I think we do need to know what's going on. I think the district can settle the lawsuit. I think all they want is for the emergency water supply to be fully permitted. It never went through the full permit process at Slo County. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard to do. Instead of going for a permanent long-term permit, I guess I don't understand why we're not just finishing the CDP process with Slo County to permit what you're doing already. So when it's running right now, it's running without any limitations. It's running more wildlife can be harmed. It hasn't been fully analyzed, and it just seems to me that that could be settled, and that's another amount of money that's off our plate. We need to have written reports from Dean Flores, and we need written reports from the Ferguson Group. We're also paying for another lobbying group through Slo County, and I've never heard what they're doing for us. I don't remember how much it is, but they're lobbying for us too. But more than that, you can do this yourself. We don't need to be paying somebody $104,000 a year to go talk to coastal commissioners. You know, you guys can have meal, you know, hotel. You don't have to trust someone else to be speaking for you. You can go yourselves. I mean, we pay for you to do that already, so go ahead and do it. The meetings are free. The commissioners want to talk to people. You can call them. You don't even have to travel there. You know, you can open these doors yourselves. That we elect you to do that for us, not pay someone else to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. That's all the request for public comment under item 5. So we will move then to item 6, the General Manager's Report, and we'll begin with General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President and Board members. Item 6A is my General Manager's Report. I've included a draft timeline for the CCSD rate study, and I'll allow the Rate Study Committee to comment a little bit on that, and also a timeline for the CCSD Emergency Water Supply Project CEQA scheduled. This is the timeline related to the EIR. Just one thing, there is a potential to shorten this schedule. A follow-up conference call to further discuss each milestone and time commitment may be necessary. We meet every week on a conference call with the EIR consultant, and we move that process forward. The other thing, my report is just fairly short this month. As indicated in the Cambrian today, and as people had indicated, as of Tuesday, we started the EWS. It's running 8 to 9 hours a day, and it's producing between 200,000 and 300,000 gallons a day. So I just wanted to let the board know about that. The other department managers' reports are in here. If you have any questions regarding them, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Bob's report's in here, water, wastewater, facilities, and resources. Joellen covered a lot of things on facility and resources. One thing that I would like to have the board spend some time on is the financial report that Patrick has included. He's updated the report regarding our cash flow projections for the year, and as I had stated earlier to the board, when we came up with these projections early on, they were worst case scenario projections. They were very conservative. They made some assumptions regarding our expenditures. They made some assumptions regarding our revenues, and actually, it's the outlook for the district financially is not nearly as bad as we originally projected, which is encouraging. I spoke to the realtors today. We are not going broke. We are not going to go bankrupt. Once we get the groundwater management plan in place, we have correspondence from the county that indicates they will forward it on to DWR for our payment. So with that being said, if Patrick could go ahead and give his information, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Madam President, members of the board, I did do a revised cash flow projection yesterday. I do one every day, actually. If I could get that revised projection up on the screen, there are also copies out in the lobby. Basically, the projection that's included in the board packet showed November with a $43 deficit. That's now projected to be about a $25,000 surplus. However, it's important to note that these are all estimates, and that's probably plus or minus $50,000 one way or the other. But the big thing is we've controlled our major expenditures. We're not spending $75,000 and $100,000 on things now like we were doing during the summer. Hopefully that will continue. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Okay, none at this time. Sure, we could start then with you. We do have, and it's a choice. I think so. I think since we've heard that this is the general manager's report, correct? Okay, we have two requests for public comment. We'll start with Tina Dickinson.
Well, thank you again. I was out at the EWS facility on Monday, September the 14th, and I was given permission by State Parks to go up to above the vehicle bridge, and I would like to show you two photos of Mr. Gruber, Justin Smith, and a CDM Smith employee on the 14th. There's a huge pile of dirt that was dug up, and they're looking into a hole. I would like to know on the 14th of September, before they supposedly turned it on, G present, it's a disaster. This is a very close-up one of the algae from the vehicle bridge. This is one from San Simeon Lagoon at the beach in San Simeon. This is another of two herons, two egrets sitting on the pumps out at the EWS pond. And this is several pictures I've taken where I've been out there almost every day. No water has been coming out with the exception of one day when I was out there from the 14th through the 21st. This, in contrast, is Santa Rosa Creek Lagoon. There is no algae present there. And yesterday I went to Pico Creek and took photos of Pico Creek. There's a small amount. I would really like to know more about this Energy Watch PG&E program. It says that loan payments are made from future utility billings. We already have an EWS first charge. Then we have a user charge. Now we have a production charge that's going to be coming pretty soon. Then you want a rate increase. And now there's this utility that's something from, which I don't understand, Director Thompson asked at the last meeting a little more about it. We need to know way more about that. But that's already five more increases. How much more do you think this town can put up with? I know that I can't. You don't deserve a penny more. This is disgusting what's going on. You guys know about it. Mr. Gresham knows. You know about the issues with algae, with dissolved oxygens, wanting to go into state parks with all kinds of equipment to fix the problems from this lousy, stinking, rotten project when we could have had a wonderful option of off-stream storage. No, you're not going to stop me. I will speak.
Let's move to the next. Next public comment is from Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I have only a couple of questions that I want to pose. In the earlier comment, I was appreciative of the general manager reporting that there is a $30,000 grant that the CCSD has received for the hazard mitigation plan, And he said, if I may quote, I don't know if the board knew about that. So I'm just raising this because I hope there's a standard procedure for you all to be informed of significant new revenues as well as significant new expenses so that you don't have to just hear at a board meeting that we've gotten a new hazard mitigation plan grant for $30,000 or any other grant. I heard him say in his report, Madam President, that you would be updated on the status of the $200,000 grant for which you've been waiting for some considerable time. I didn't hear that update from anybody, so I hope that's impending. That when I hear the ad hoc committee reports, I will be fully edified on the rate increase proposals. I wrote to you, as you well know, and to the staff, saying that for those of us who were not among the seven people who were able to attend the workshop, we're waiting to be informed about the substance of the possible rate increase. So I look forward to that today. I ask that any PowerPoints be put on the website. They aren't there. So I'm assuming that I'm just over-anxious, and I will be informed about all this as the community will in the immediate future. I would also like to know exactly what is holding up the CEQA schedule. I now see that I will be asked to comment on it in a few months, but the public hearing won't be until 2016. What import does that have on our $4.3 million grant application? And what import does it have on, and I realize I'll run out of time, on this final item I'm going to raise? Friends, we have spent more than $10 million to date on the EWS plant. That's a hell of a lot of money. And we were just informed today, it's running 8 to 9 hours a day, 200 to 300 gallons. And that was the sum total by your general manager of the information about this huge investment we've made. That was the sum total, friends. That is called an inadequate report. That is called an insufficient report. And I urge you, as the overseers of your general manager, please insist to this gentleman, my last sentence, that he inform the community about what's happening with our humongous investments in providing utilities for us, which is the obligation, if I might tell you what you know, of the board.
Thank you. Next on 6A, we have Mary Webb.
Thank you again. I was going to mention the same thing Elizabeth just did, that we don't have anything on the website about the rate meeting or any proposals for rates. And so, you know, for those who couldn't attend that meeting, we just don't have any information. On the slide that was on the board a minute ago, it says that by December 15th, we have $1,205,317. But what I don't understand, the finance officer doesn't ever talk about, is note 2, which says the CCSD currently owes approximately $1,128,000 to vendors for work completed or committed for the EWS but not yet paid, and which is not included in the above expenditures. So when, you know, we are saying that we're bankrupt and we don't have any money, and I'm really concerned that we need a fiduciary receivership of this district, it's due to the fact that we owe $1,128,000 in addition to whatever projections you are saying that we're going to have by the end of the year. And so I don't understand how do you do, what kind of accounting is this? We don't have $678,000. We owe more. You know, we owe $700,000. We're in debt now based on your own records. And to try to get a grant for the wastewater treatment plant of $6.7 million, we can't have no money in our accounts and qualify for a grant. How does that work? Don't you have to have matching? Don't we have to have, are we putting up more of our infrastructure or more of our assets to get money to work on the wastewater treatment plant, which needs more than $7 million? The last estimate was $10 million. Again, I think we need a receivership of the district. I'm seriously concerned about the finances, and these answers are not forthcoming.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, on 6A, let's. Are there some
Madam
comments
President?
From the board, comments
Excuse
from the
me.
General manager, comments from Mr. Gresham?
Yeah, I would like to take a shot at some of the questions. I think it's appropriate that we answer some of the questions. And Bob, he was taking notes too, so.
Yeah, excuse me for interrupting, but I just want to clarify a portion of the staff report I wrote to support the general manager's report. And it could be just the way a sentence was phrased that maybe it confused people. So I just want to clarify a little bit. And this has to do with the Energy Watch PG&E program that the county's been spearheading. I attended a meeting earlier this month, and it was just they did an outstanding job, the county staff, the PG&E rep, and the consultant doing that study. But to clarify, the way that program works, it's the utility billings from PG&E to the district that have this offset. And I can see where this last sentence where it says, any loan payments from this program are made from future utility billings. Those are the utility billings from PG&E to the CCSD. Right. They're not the utility billings of the constituents of you here in Cambria. I just want to make sure that's understood. And then the last part of that, with the energy savings on a utility bill, again, the CCSD PG&E electrical bill offsetting the amortized cost of the loan. So how that works, if you get the energy savings from their study and you implement the most cost-effective ones, you should not have any increase. It should net each other, those costs out. So they give you a no-interest loan to pay for the energy savings measures, and then they add the cost of the loan onto your future energy bill, which in turn is reduced because now you have energy savings going on. So I just want to explain that in a little more detail because I could see where the choice of words utility billings could be very confusing to the public. And I also would offer that I will extend an invitation to the county staff to maybe give you a brief presentation on this program. I think they did a fabulous job, and I think they deserve some credit for the effort that went into that study. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President. So the pictures that Ms. Dickinson was referring to, the hole that was dug, try to keep a good sense of humor here. It was for the installation of the dechlorination system that was going in. Part of that dechlorination system will have a component in there that adds dissolved oxygen to the mitigation water, which is so it'll help the DO in the creek. So that's what we were doing, standing over a hole out there. The algae, as I've talked about the last four or five board meetings, staff's done a really good job in bringing the nitrates down from 30s and 40s to as low as 1.47 milligrams per liter of nitrates. And so our TMDL, our total maximum daily load of nitrates going out that lagoon, is significantly less than what it was before. Historically, what was not mentioned is that is a contained body of water. If you look at that lagoon, you have a body of stagnant water that has been sitting there for an extended period of time, with hundreds, if not thousands, of birds going to the bathroom in there. That bathroom is really high in nitrates. In addition to the picture, which causes algae bloom, warm weather causes algae bloom, pH causes algae bloom. A lot of different things cause algae blooms. The creek itself, if you notice, the algae was attached to the vegetation below the water level. There are a great deal of things, and us being one of them, I'm sure, over a period of time that have contributed to that. But there's livestock that goes all the way up that watershed. There's the state parks dumping. Let me just finish, please. I gave you the courtesy, so please allow me the same.
So, you really need to stop.
So there's we've really, this project, it's really been very, very environmentally friendly. I'm happy to say that Anything that's been asked of the district from the regulatory agencies regarding environmental concerns for this project, we've done. And that kind of touches on some of the cost overrides. It's been a point of contention and about the cost associated with some of them, some of the project cost overrides, but they've all been associated with environmental mitigation. And so from the get-go, the board's commitment on this project was to build and operate a project that was environmentally friendly. And we're doing that. And anything that's been asked of us from an environmental standpoint, we've done and we'll continue to do. And the fact that we're putting 100 gallons of mitigation water into a creek that historically would run dry, I think benefits that. So I think that covered Ms. Dickinson's questions. With regards to Ms. Mettenhausen's questions, the comment I made regarding the local hazard mitigation plan, Chief Lewin and I sent the board emails on this, and I'm sure you were aware of it. By saying I'm not sure if you were aware of it, is what I mean is my board works really, really hard. They receive tons of emails from me, and I wouldn't take it personal if you were to say, Jerry, I don't read all your emails you send me. So I was just hoping that you had a chance to read that, and they knew of that. The $250,000 that was referred to was stated, actually, and I had commented on it about the check being in the mail. But if you also look at the finance director's notes on number two, it indicates, or number one, that indicates that money is forthcoming. I touched on the EIR, the $4.3 million. There is no nexus between the EIR and the $4.3 million. The county has indicated us to through emails as of just a couple days ago, and those are public records, that once the board adopts the groundwater management plan, that they'll forward the money up to Sacramento to DWR to process for our funding. So that will result in $4.3 million for the district. It was 200 to 300,000 gallons a minute, not 200 to 300 gallons per minute. So that's what we're putting out. I've stated this in my general manager's report and for cost-saving measures before, is CDM is absolutely on board, and they understand that we are not in a position to pay them $1.2 million right now. And they understand that, and they also understand that when we get the $4.3 million, we'll be able to pay them. With regards to the $6.7 million for the wastewater plant, there's several variables. Once we get our $4.3 million and we pay CDM, we're going to have about $2.5 million in the bank. And we staff has every reason to believe, so does our district council, the county, the Department of Water Resources, that we're going to get our money. So we'll have $2.3 million back in the bank. Regarding the $6.7 million that we applied for the Prop 1 funding, Elizabeth was absolutely right on this. There is a matching portion, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, I think it's 65-35, but it's a very low interest loan. And in 2016, one of our wastewater bonds will be paid off. I'm optimistic that our rate adjustments that are needed to sustain the water and wastewater departments will go through. And I'm very optimistic that our $4.3 million will be provided to the board. We're doing everything we can. We're not going broke. We're not going bankrupt. When we get that money, we'll be in a good position. We counted on that. The cost overrides, again, associated with this project are for a lot of the environmental and regulatory mitigation measures that were asked of us. And early on in the process, we agreed with those regulatory agencies, because we want the community to know that this is an environmentally friendly project. There were earlier comments about people biting for water from Lake Nacimiento, San Luis Obispo, and things like that. We're not in that position. We're not going to have to worry about running out of water in 3 years. So I hope I addressed all the questions.
Thank you. Comments, discussion from the board? All right. Director Rice?
Just to policy and things the board has enacted in relation to the exceptional
conservation measures that most people in town have been undertaking and undertaking successfully, which is part of the revenue issue right now. But in relation to that, there are also folks that we now know are not just, oops, we goofed this time, but continuing to violate our ordinances and our resolution to require the conservation. And to me, regardless of whether or not we have the water to provide to these overusers, I'm going to call them, perhaps these people that are continuing to violate the rules, if we don't at least contact them and say something other than charging them with the surcharges, because we do have rules in our ordinance that say if you are a habitual line stepper, so to speak, you could even be brought to court by the district because we have those powers as part of our ordinance. I would hope that even though we don't have a specific person designated as a conservation coordinator, that we would be addressing these continuing. There are some folks that are continuing to use more than their allocation because that's what they have to use. We're lucky we don't have places like hospitals in this town, because there are a lot of communities in this state that are dealing with a lot of water use that cannot be reduced. You know, there's certain health laws that are related to restaurants and grocery stores that just can't be avoided. But there are people who, or businesses, I don't know exactly who they are because that's part of the confidentiality right now, who are egregious abusers of water use here. And I would hope that policy is going to be implemented on folks. At least let's send them a letter instead of just sending them a bigger bill. It seems to me that would be a good idea, because if the surcharges aren't slowing them down, we should probably talk to them.
We're going to get a much better feel for by the different categories on how much water people are using over the next billing cycle, and I think we can provide that information. But I absolutely agree with you. I think we can do a better job. And you know, we have staff out driving around, and I just need to, and I made myself a note, and I'll follow through on this, is to have them be aware and have that schedule posted in their vehicles. And if they see somebody, report it to our office. And then I think that's a good idea. We haven't been doing that. You're absolutely right, and I agree with you.
Yes, Director Barner.
Yeah, I've got a couple of really mundane things there. I do want to comment on the draft project schedule, which was in your report, but I want to do that after the ad hoc committee report, if you don't mind. So I have some suggestions there, and I just communicated with Director Rice on that. I see that there's 56 events held at the Vets Hall, and when we were trying to schedule our ad hoc meeting, we were in conflict with a couple, and it seemed like people didn't show up. Is this of the ones that were scheduled or the ones that actually happened? And how many were
less free than they were before? And some of the people are even sitting in the room right now. But staff's done a really good job in just saying no. And one of my staff members said something I thought was brilliant yesterday. And she said this. She said, if it was free, how can they be mad at you? And what I... You know, it was profound, and it was, I've given you something free for so long. How can you be mad now that I'm charging you? Right. And it was profound. I won't say who it was. She's probably listening right now. But we'll get that, which can be put back into this facility, but also can be put back into the ranch. So one of the things that I wanted to propose to the board under future agenda items is some kind of policy, administrative policy, about having advance notice of some kind, because we're running into some scheduling conflicts with the Veterans Hall. A lot of good causes, a lot of people want to use this facility. Many of the agencies are outside of the town, but we're getting a relatively short notice from them, and we want to accommodate them, but an administrative policy of something that says, hey, can I at least have 30 or 60 days, would allow for, especially the events people outside the community, it would allow for us to do a better job in coordinating the activities.
And in this one case, they were only using the fireside room. We could have used this. It was, you know, a lot of things like that. The other thing is, and this is mainly directed to the board president, As far as the emergency water supply project and the EIR, EIS that we're working on, I encourage that we continue to touch base with the Army Corps of Engineers. They, if they can find any money in their budget to help accelerate or use the work that they've done so well, I hope that we just, with the Fire Focus Group, for instance, and others, Senator Monning, well, Monning is really state, but you know, somebody should, you know, we should try and hit the button while it's hot, because there's $6 million
in there. Too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So please, that's just a reminder, and that's all I had.
Okay. I wanted to also just request a couple of things as just maybe just a statistical report, and that would be, I think it would be interesting on, regarding the Vets Hall, if we just had a month-to-month, so we could kind of have a comparative, just a bottom-line figure on how much we do receive. And so we could at least have an idea of, you know, how much really the Vets Hall is, you know, receiving each month. And the other thing is, too, Director Rice brought this up, and I think, again, it would be interesting for all of us here to see, because I have no idea, and it is a quandary, what do you do with consistent violators and that type of thing. I can tell you I have no idea how many violators we have. I have not any idea, because that's a very personal, private thing. But I was wondering if we could have, again, just the statistics on it, if it's possible. Can we find out, say, on at least a bi-monthly report, how many residential, how many business, any other category that we're missing, actually overuse, how many are actually in that second category where they're doing power washing of cars, of homes, or that kind of thing, that the only thing we're doing outside right now is the one day a week of irrigation. I'd like to see, are the numbers large? You know, what is really the you know, the number of people that are involved? And if they continue to violate things more than the three times and you're out or whatever we're doing, do we ever actually, you know, enforce that, because that would be a tough one to turn somebody's water off. Nowhere to go. But at least I'd like the data just to see what are we talking about. Okay. Director Barriner, nothing?
Oh,
any other directors? Director Rice?
I also wanted to bring us back to the touchstone of our goals for the year, which one of which was the CDP and the EIR. And I know that we're progressing toward that, but maybe the general manager's report could speak to that a little more completely. I know we're still progressing with the county. We're kind of at a standstill because we have to get the EIR done, and we're doing our district engineer is only one human being and only so many hours in the week. So there's only so much you can do all at once, but it seems to me we need to be getting those reports. I'd also like to say that in February, when the Coastal Commission was in Pismo Beach, I had a talk with Sarah Christie, who most folks know is the legislative person for the Coastal Commission and used to be a planning commissioner in this county and has a strong interest in this community. And I said to her, because I was concerned that we were building a project before we had seen a full EIR on the environmental impacts, and I figured that she would be a good person to know what I'm, and I asked her at the time, this was back in February, I said, here's the situation. We're trying to get this under, you know, we're trying to get our arms around the situation. Is it reasonable? Does it seem like too long that we're having to wait all the way until the fall, or maybe possibly even turn around, even though we already had a negative declaration that they should have been working off of, which kind of said to me that I think that we are doing the best we can in terms of moving forward, that our consultant's doing a good job on trying to make sure that it's thorough and as much as possible be ready for what possible comments might be coming. And I think that little things like that, if the general manager can report these kinds of things, that these are the actual progress, this is the progress. We had a meeting on the CDP with the county, or I didn't know that President Robinette was meeting about the EIR. I mean, I don't know these things if you don't tell us. So it's good communication for us and for the community, I think, to know, especially since that in the future, just so we can know much more, especially now that it's on, because now we're creating different impacts than just the impacts of the construction. So I think it's really important that we get those kinds of reports, please.
Okay. It's interesting, just really quick, on the regular coastal development permit, if you recall the comments made by the county, the majority of the comments were directed towards environmental issues. And that's the nexus. Once we get the EIR done, we'll be able to, and there is a process. It goes to the Planning Commission, then goes to the Board of Supervisors, it goes to Coastal. So we'll do a better job on our staff reports of indicating to the board what the process is other than the timeline. What we have done and who we have involved in the process is now the county folks. And we included them in our last meeting, and because we do not want to get down the path so far without them having a chance to be involved in the process, but also give us valuable input on how they want to make sure the components of the EIR are addressed, specifically the coastal plan and things like that. So I think the timeline, you know, we're working as hard as we can and as fast as we can, but we also want a good document. I think that's more important than getting it done in a unrealistic time frame. So we did build the plant, the EWS, under an emergency coastal development permit that did not require an EIR. And again, as I mentioned earlier, this is an environmentally friendly friendly project. The board could have chose to say we're just going to run this in perpetuity forever under an emergency coastal development permit. Again, I think the board's been more than diligent regarding the environmental and regulatory issues associated with this project. So that's why the board chose to go for a regular coastal development permit and do the full EIR. But absolutely, Director Rice, we'll make sure that I have a more detailed explanation of some meetings relating to this.
It doesn't have to be lengthy or super detailed, but just a kind of bullet point so that we know that we can see the actual tasks that are being undertaken, because I know that you're doing them and staff is very busy doing them, I'm sure.
Thank you. Okay. Director Thompson.
Yes, I just wanted to highlight something in the new trash cans on Main Street this next week. These trash cans have been paid for with a grant from, I think, Recycle, and they're really terrific. They'll replace those nasty, ugly old cans that are out there, and in fact, folks actually want those cans. So
apparently.
So I really want to commend Carlos for the work he's done on that. It really will be a and beautify Canberra. It will really be a positive addition to Main Street.
Thank you. Any other comments, observations on the general manager's report? We'll move then to our ad hoc reports.
Madam President?
Yes?
Could I ask that we take a short break? Because I would like... you know, I have to apologize to the other member, not able to discuss some things with him, and I'd like to have 5 minutes, if we could take a break.
Well, we've been at it 2 hours, and time does fly when we're having fun, and so I see it's a very reasonable time to request before the ad hoc committee reports. Let's have a 10-minute break. We can't go if Kathy's not here. We can't go if the general manager's not here. So, well, or we could just move on. Here he comes. We'll be moving to item 6B now, and we have a public comment request on 6B, so I'd like to begin with that. You'd rather come after?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's move to our ad hoc committee reports. And so we have some active ad hocs for sure going on here, and so do you have any order you'd like to report in? I see that Director... Yeah. Baringer has his hand up.
And mine isn't necessarily an ad hoc committee report as much as it is from the Fire Safe Council that I went to last night. And perhaps I can answer a few questions that were brought up by the attendees here today. Then if I...
And I would like the public to know we have been very actively involved as a board with the Fire Focus Group. I go most of the time, and then when I'm not there, Director Barringer's there. And if... In case we both have other commitments, and also we've had Director Rice attending. So we just want Shirley Bianchi and the group to know that we're certainly there.
Right. So as far as the fire safety group, it meets every other week at the fire department, and it's a round table. If you're not familiar with it, it's a round table of about 15 people each time. There's some key players. Dan Turner is in charge of... the emergency services in the county. The county itself is extremely involved in this particular thing. Ken Topping is a key player there. It's all run. Shirley Bianchi is the chair. She likes to say that she's good at herding cats. And when you have diverse groups like this, that is just what you have to do. You have to make sure everybody comes to the, reads the agenda. Plan is something that we need to fast track. The county does have a local hazard mitigation plan, and if, in fact, there is a disaster, they can get FEMA money, but they're trying to focus on campus. Yesterday, that was, you know, last night, Dan Turner did mention the fact that a grant money is coming in because of these fires. They're coming into the county, and they've pre-allocated some of that money to help us with this local hazard mitigation plan. They actually had it. I was trying to help find somebody ahead of time that could actually do this, write this grant, or write the local hazard mitigation plan, because some people may not be in line for it. Dan mentioned that they had two Cal Poly students that could work on it, and because of the importance of it, and Mr. Gruber said, and it's not quite in the mail, because it's a group of money that the county's going to get, but they've already carved out $30,000 for our benefit. So that's happening. They're very responsive. The county is working very hard. The group itself is working very hard. And the overall situation is that the Cambria Forest isn't all in Cambria. We're kind of an agency that's going to try and do a lot of the work, but it's a county-wide problem, and the county is going to get a lot of money, and they're going to divide it up into different areas. But I am very encouraged that the county officials from Cal Fire, from disaster preparedness, from everybody up and down the line, and county planning, that they're working hard on getting things done. In fact, they're the ones, this group, is what stimulated the acceptance of a couple of cell towers that are going to be in place, and there's another one that's been put up.
And local, too. We also have Joyce Renshaw, the president for the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Reserve, is there because it's certainly a big stake in the participation. Right.
So the Forest Committee?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that report. And do you want to move then into the rate ad hoc?
At your discretion, I also have two other meetings that I attended on behalf of the district. Do you want me to report on those first or do the ad hoc? Do you have a preference?
Why don't we do the ad hocs and then we'll move to the the more individual kinds of things we're doing?
So, we had a little bit of a disappointing turnout on the rates workshop. I don't know if there was a miscommunication or people just couldn't come on that day. It might help if we had
a mailing list so folks could be informed when we are having these keys. We do notice them so that folks can come. And what we talked about was what are the goals for the rate study. The primary goal for the rate study is to get to a point where we pretty much as soon as the rates are implemented, hopefully, get to a point where we are not using general funds to subsidize the water department and the wastewater department. Of course, going along with that is any money that is charged for water or wastewater is specific for those departments and we can't even move the water to the wastewater or wastewater to water. So that's why it's important to get the study done right and have the underlying assumptions be somewhat, have it be for a 5-year period with an option for the board every year to approve an escalator up to 5%, because we do have agreed contracts in place that have been approved for the union that for the water and wastewater departments that they get an increase in their salary, and so we have to at least account for that, if not for other increased costs over time. And that is, we asked him to include looking at that possibility and what that would mean. It wouldn't be an automatic increase, but it would have to be approved by the board each year after we look at what the budget looks like and what our income and what our revenue and water use is. So on the water side, we asked Bartle Wells to use certain assumptions, including an operational costs budget that includes $250,000 per year for water and wastewater each, and the ad hoc committee at this point is recommending that major capital projects such as the sewer upgrades that need to be done, the significant upgrades that need to be done on sewer, would be funded separately through bond, a bank, or whoever would be loaning us money. Grants, it's important that you have matching funds, which is another reason why it's important that we get the rates right. So that's the assumption on the big capital projects, that we would either be going out to the voters for a bond or trying to find grants or other ways to fund it rather than just building it into the rates. There's a couple of near-term capital improvements that need to be done, including the Fiscalini tank upgrade, fix, whatever. I don't know what we're calling that particular project, the Fiscalini tank that we're doing. There's some near-term projects that are not teeny that are included in the budget numbers that our finance manager has provided to Bartle Wells, and those will be built in a way that so we can afford to pay for these really important immediate needs for our infrastructure. We are not including any particular set aside for building on a cash reserve or accumulating cash reserve. We actually are going to be looking at, looks like, at a reserve policy soon, whether next month or the month after, possibly, it looks like, based on the general manager's report. So we don't have like a padding built in because we want to set some money aside. Number of accounts. And let me make sure that I've got the rest of these. The budget numbers also, after, as a result of the meeting that we had, the budget numbers, Patrick went back and sharpened his pencil to look at what those input numbers were for the budget for both water and wastewater to see if there were places where the numbers could be whittled down, if there were things in the budget that we could reduce the amount. The other important assumptions are how much we expect people are going to use water, because that is the basis of what the rate would be, is if we sell 10 units and we need to make $100, they're going to be $10 a unit in the most simple language. It's much more complicated than that, of course. But we have done a really good job conserving, and as a result of the conversations that we had at the ad hoc committee, We had proposed possibly using 70% of the 2013 water use as the as a baseline to do the calculations. We had gone up in the rate study in 2014 that we looked at that Bartle Wells put together. We had used a number of 80% of the 2013 use. I think that probably it's much more realistic to go with 70. We might want to think about whether we want to try and stick with what we actually are selling right now, especially if we can't lift restrictions before these. And because there is the opportunity to do the escalator each year, the board can approve. That will be built into the rate study and the presentation of the proposal, so folks would know that that's going to happen if it goes that way, if the board wants that to happen. We also asked Bartle Wells to include some money for a water efficiency program. I think we finally got to $150,000 annual for water efficiency program, and that's like there's still plenty of houses in this community that need to have toilets replaced, that need to have shower heads replaced, that could use an irrigation rebate perhaps or other kinds of things that would encourage improved efficiency, which is essentially permanent reduction in water use, which means that we have to be very careful about how we do the billing so that we don't, again, shoot ourselves in the foot. Right now on your water bill, there's a fixed rate that you pay, and that fixed, and then you start charging at unit one instead of unit five, which is what it is right now. What it means is low users will probably see an increase in their bill, even if their water use stays low, but it's important because our fixed costs are so much of a big percentage of our costs and not the variable costs, since we don't actually pay for the water, but we do pay for the pumping. How much water you use does affect how much energy we have to use for pumping and those things, but the fixed costs are actually much more of the issue, and so starting to charge at unit one will help us recover some of those fixed costs in a much more realistic way. That's on the water side. Does anybody have any questions or comments before I go on the wastewater side?
If you're talking about fixed charges from unit one, and I support that, but what I think this drought has shown us is that there's a fixed cost, mm-hmm. no matter how much water.
That's right.
And I guess what I'm looking to is to say, is the fixed cost going to increase and the cost of water decrease, or are both mm-hmm. going to increase?
Don't know. Alex hasn't run those numbers yet, and he was not comfortable giving us numbers already, even though he has some of those assumptions. He was not comfortable getting those numbers to us before today's meeting. But I agree with you, and we talked about possibly even having, since I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, if that about 80% of the water on the water side is fixed, so there's no variation whether we deliver 1 gallon or not. But to have the bills be 80, we had this talk with Alex a little bit when we were talking about this, to have the fixed charge be 80% of the bill and then the unit charges, then doesn't leave a whole lot of room for, you know, being able to reduce your bill by using less water. Not that that's necessarily has to be a consideration, but you know, that is. Did you want to?
Well, yeah, I'll just, you know, the study's done and it's complete, but there's some major differences, and one of them, even though I watched the tapes and the consensus was the bill on unit number one, he didn't have the information on how much was fixed and how much was variable. Really, I don't think he had that in his schedule. He also assumed that we're going to jump back to 80% of 2013's use. It's very clear we're not going to jump that high. Also, he had a growth factor in there. We're going to grow by so many homes each year. We took that out. There's no growth in this program whatsoever. And the CIP, the Capital Improvement Fund, is really just a few million dollars. It's what we have to do on Fiscalini Ranch, what we know we have to do with another tank, what we know we have to do in the pump station. And any major CIP object is out of there. So those changes, we vetted with the audience, and we really want to vet with the board. Mm-hmm. Do you want to re? And I got an email 11 o'clock this morning. He said, you know, I got some idea, you know, I'm plugging the numbers in, but they aren't good enough to, you know, for public display. And one of the things we are doing, though, after the meeting, we did have only three general slides that we were talking to. We'll post those on the website, you know, tomorrow if we can. But there's underlying financial assumptions, and it went so that if we continue to sell very little water, we at least are above water on the water side. And so we're going to post those slides, but the first week in October, one thing I was going to mention on the general manager's report, we did have, as soon as Mr. Handler gets the numbers together, rather than him presenting it to us as a final fait accompli, or during a board meeting having it actually as a public vetting, we'd like to be able to present it, post it on the website, have the public come in and understand what was behind the numbers. But we are trying to eliminate eight different ways of doing it. So if I'm hearing that you'd like to have the base fee, or did I not answer your question?
Well, my position would be that that you, the base fee probably needs to cover a greater portion than what it's covering right now. And I do agree that that you probably should charge from unit one. I would like I would suggest that there be something in there to foster conservation of water.
Right.
Then I mean, because if you make my fixed fee $80 and $1 for a unit of water, I'm going to use all I want.
Right. Right. And Alex did explain, and there has been a lawsuit that was successful that that showed that you cannot charge more for a customer than what it costs you to deliver that to them. And yet tiers can be there for conservation, but it has to be carefully done. Last year, if I watched the videos right, and I think I did, people wanted to limit it down to three tiers instead of the eight or nine that we have. And on that side, that's all I have to question. And we're going to go into wastewater.
From the conservation side, I mean, I lived in a community where there was just a fixed charge per month, and you used whatever amount of water you wanted to use. And so there was never any question about whether you just, I mean, you just used whatever you wanted.
I think we're looking at trying to balance those two concerns.
I think you've got to give some incentive for conservation.
Right. Because I agree, too.
People want to have a feeling that they control somewhat of their bill.
And ad hoc-wise, we were thinking about making sure that the breaks are logical breaks where people are familiar with it, like charge for the first unit up to eight because everybody's allowed eight, and then have the next tier from eight to something reasonable like 20, and then after that it's
go down. He's going to calculate that based on water usage.
Right, but increasing the fixed charge, you're going to get a complaint from the very low water users and the people who are secondary houses.
People aren't complaining, then we probably aren't doing the right job. I'm just saying that people will have criticisms no matter which
right.
way.
Right. You expect that criticism from the person who says, you know, I only use the house.
We're talking residential so far, correct?
Yes. That was all primarily residential. And with the commercial, he's working on the commercial rates to make, and one of the goals with the commercial rates is to make sure that there's equity between the two two different classes of customers so that you know we don't have commercial subsidizing residential and on the other flip side have it the other way around there's an equitable.
Okay, so you'll move on to that consideration.
I
think it'll depend on what the numbers actually look like when we get them. But I think that we talked briefly about having only one tier on the commercial because the big users that use a lot of units, the school is always going to use more than the first four units, which is, you know, if you say one to four is worth, you know, there's a $250 a piece, but then, you know, you're at $5 when you're at the next level up, then you're going to end up. They're never going to just stay in those 250 in that first tier.
Right.
So
and so it was meter size on commercial. If they have a 2-inch meter, they charge a certain base rate. If they're an office and they only have a 3/4-inch meter, they're not going to be using that much water.
And their base rate will probably be a high, just like it is now, probably be a higher amount than the residential base rate, and it will be based on their meter. As I think that, but I think Alex was pretty clear, and I think that that's kind of one of the things that he does fairly well is making sure there's an equity between, you know, the, everybody bears the cost of the system, mm-hmm. and hopefully proportionally to how much they're using of the system. Adding wear and tear and that kind of thing.
Wastewater?
Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Okay. So wastewater, the assumptions that we used on the wastewater side, again, we used a budget, and we tightened down some of the numbers on the budget because we don't want to just meet the budget wishes, no offense to the staff at all. We don't want to just meet the budget with $1 this year. Let's do that. Let's increase the rates so that happens. Well, we're trying to nail those down on both sides, is make sure that we have good budget numbers that are not excessive, and we're looking at having a fixed charge. Did we finally ever? I think I was confused. Did we ever say whether it was going to be just a fixed total or if it's going to be a fixed plus a
fixed plus a variable
based on how much water you use?
Right, but okay. but it would be probably a single tier for commercial. And
no, for residential.
No, a single tier for the water. Okay.
For the
wastewater, it's strength based.
Right.
So a resident has a certain strength. In other words, they're just poop, you know.
Low.
Okay.
So dishwasher.
TMI.
That's it, you know. And then, and then for a commercial user, they might be a restaurant, and the strength of the effluent is much stronger.
Right.
And industrial, it would be even greater. But we don't have very much industrial at all. And Alex is very experienced. He does it for every place in the world. He's listened to every argument in the world, but we're different. And he said, well, you know, in the summer, you use more outdoor water. We're saying, look, we don't use any outdoor water. We're basing it on what we used this summer, you know, and what our costs were without any outdoor watering. So there's certain kind of concepts that he has to change. He also deals with hospitals. He deals with schools. And we do have some schools, and he deals with industrial waste. And so we might only have, we'll have a residential wastewater charge. We'll have the concept is to have a higher BMI user, and it might be meter size that we do it with, and then a third one for an industrial customer, and I don't know who that might be.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot, it'll probably be that way in the future. And they use a lot of water, and that's, sometimes that's good. You know, everybody has reduced the water as they can, but you can only reduce it so much, and then you just can't reduce it anymore. So,
had we had an entire a wastewater charge that was entirely based on just that fixed charge and not had a commodity rate, though, we may not have had such a problem with having lowered revenues of the drought and reduction of consumption.
Right, but you don't want...
I think that one's still up
user,
in the air, is
you,
what
you
I
should
think
charge,
that one says.
Even on the sewer charge, we agreed or that a high user should pay more to help
system.
Them try and conserve water in mm-hmm. general. So...
Yeah, and that one we're relying a little bit more on Alex's expertise in that area. One of the budget items it does include is $35,000 a year for the CCTV monitoring of the evaluation of the collection system that is part of our sanitary sewer collection.
Cameras.
Yeah. So so that's one of the things that we have included in there. And again, on both sides, $250,000 in for what we're calling major maintenance, on both sides. So $250,000 on the wastewater side is what we're using for the for annual. Is that am I
was
getting
it $150,000 or $250,000?
$250,000.
$250,000.
Annually?
Yes,
annually.
So a half million.
Right,
a half
million.
A half a million for both. But
so
since
if he needs
they're
to do,
segregated.
Yeah.
So
if he needs to do something, you know,
as Director Beringer said, that we'll have a more complete presentation, and Alex will come, and hopefully Alex will come, or somebody will come from Barta Wells and give us a presentation on what those numbers look like. There are some spots where there will still be some decisions that need to be made by the board in terms of how you want to approach on a policy level. related to the some of the things that I just mentioned. We don't really have a written report, Patrick, but we do have the PowerPoint that we used at the ad hoc committee, right. and I would encourage folks to feel free to contact me if they have concerns, and they can also contact. I don't know how you want to do that, Jerry, if you want to have them email to you or to Patrick if they have things that they, or to the board, if folks in the community have concerns they'd like to raise before we get to that next presentation on the rates.
They can move, email them to Patrick, and Patrick okay. can forward them on to yeah. Alex probably, you know.
And my preference, my the costs us to produce, what Alex is going to do is say, this is how much he feels we should bill to recover that cost, and those are the ones that people are going to be interested in. So.
And I would put my pitch out here. We need to decide what level of water use do we want to have him using as the base assumption, whether we should be sticking with essentially what 60% of what we used in 2013, which is kind of our current level, or if you want to have it go up to something like 70. I think 80 is way overshooting
the target. How about 65?
Target.
How about 65?
But I mean, serious. We don't necessarily need it.
He wants to come up with a number. Not to come up with a number. You think 65 of 65? 65? Here's 65. Here's 70. 70. 65.
There's been a little bit of loosening by having a little bit of outside watering now, so you could probably assume 65.
Okay.
No more
65 is conservative.
No more than 70.
If we start selling more, then we can always, you know, reduce rates or reallocate funds. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for that very comprehensive.
I know it was there's so much going on with it, and I just want to make sure the public has as much information as we can provide mm-hmm. to them. So, I hope
so.
That
and
helps.
Then when there are our community members that have ideas and comments, and they're to send them to the CSD to okay Patrick. To our financial ad hoc with the fire resources. Okay.
And I appreciate having the break there because I have to indicate to the board and the public that we took pretty extensive notes during the course of all the meetings, but I had some personal situations that just made it impossible to get them together, and I only got them to Director Thompson at the early part of this week, so... I'll go from the notes that I have here, and then Director Tompkins can add in. I'm not going to release these as yet because we did make some commitments to some individuals that what they told us was in private, and we'll summarize them rather than give the actual deal. We had two meetings with the public, one on August 31st and one on September 3rd. Both meetings, the audience was in the number of 45 to 60 people. More people are interested in our project than yours, but that's fine.
Until
they get the bill. Wait till they get the bill. All right. The committee basically invited the people to speak and express their concerns and expectations. Everybody cooperated with that. During the meeting of August 31st, approximately 20 members of the audience spoke, and all of who spoke expressed a preference for retaining Cambria CSD Fire Department as a standalone fire department. They basically expressed a belief that CAL FIRE simply had a different orientation from CCSD Fire, that is wild land versus urban firefighting. And although they most expressed that they felt that CAL FIRE was excellent but there were other people that were new. And all who spoke but one, again, expressed a preference for retaining Cambria CSD Fire Department. One individual expressed a concern that maybe the group had made up its mind before it got all the information and requested that people might want to wait to make up their mind. Now, the concerns that were expressed at both meetings fell really into three categories. One was loss of control. Two was costs. And three was reductions in service and volunteer participation. Now, under loss of control, this concern, it was expressed in a general way. Almost everybody expressed a feeling of that there would be loss of control. As the discussion continued, we tried to get that refined down as to what that really meant, and it was defined in many ways. And one of the ways was they felt that that multiple chiefs created confusion in that there that that there might be multiple figureheads at, that would be assigned as chiefs. No permanently assigned personnel who know the roads, the area, and the people. So they felt that that the current permanently assigned personnel know the roads, know the area, and know people who have a need for frequent service. And so they that was of a concern. There was also a concern that the current personnel was not would not be protected in that they would not be able to stay necessarily here in Cambria if they went to CAL FIRE. They would become state employees at that point in time and could be moved around to different places. There was also a thing expressed that reserves could be skimmed off to become seasonal CAL FIRE firefighters, and that would be taking them out. There was concerns that equipment would be dictated by CAL FIRE and paid for by the CCSD, so that it wouldn't be our decisions about equipment, that it would be equipment that CAL FIRE would dictate. There was also concern that things that fire code enforcement, plan checks, inspections would be dictated from CAL FIRE central office rather than a local, easily contracted a local fire chief that you can grab by the throat and talk to, okay? All right. In the area of costs, it was in many, almost all speakers expressed concern that they hadn't seen a cost-benefit analysis. But the concerns included really a disbelief that CAL FIRE could provide services equal to or current services at any form of a reduced cost over time. The general consensus was they may come in low, but in the long run they'll be more expensive. And another concern was that CAL FIRE would immediately require replacement of current fire engine and other equipment at a time when CCSD finances are in bad shape. In the areas of reduction in level of service and volunteer participation, being a full-time chief, in that CAL FIRE chief was responsible for other stations in addition to Cambria. Chief, not a single assigned individual, which meant lack of contact for citizens. In other words, there was a feeling that local CERT would be marginalized by folding them into a countywide CERT organization. And there were concerns that the North Coast Ocean Rescue may not be compatible with CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE Rescue supposedly uses only on-duty personnel, which would be not readily available to remote North Coast locations. We did meet with firefighters. And here I'll summarize a lot of that meeting because we did indicate that until they had a chance to review anything that we wanted them to speak openly without feeling that they would be in any way affected. In fact, the ones that were on duty offered to take their badge off and say, you don't need to do that. You can speak deal. There were six regular firefighters there and one reservist who happened to be on duty that day at the meeting. the firefighters indicated that they have a cordial relationship with CAL FIRE, work together well, and see that as a continue. That they felt that one of the major concerns they would have would be loss of the quality of their life. We ask them individually, what is this a good thing for you or a bad thing for you? They mentioned some things where they felt might be good, but an overriding consideration was quality of life. And when I ask about that, and we ask them to explain that further, what they're talking about is saying when you're providing service to a unique community, unique area, unique size, that schedules and things can be regulated, and you can have family commitments and things that they expressed as being that it was unique to work for a department in which you do basically have control of your work schedule, and then you can control your outside life to that. Also, they indicate they wouldn't make as much money because if you're working 21 days straight, you make a few more bucks, but that was the case. And then we ask them from a community standpoint how they felt about a standalone fire department or being involved in CAL FIRE. And their basic concerns mirrored a lot of what the community said, that they felt that the standalone long-time participation within the fire department gave them better knowledge of the area, gave them knowledge of citizens who have special needs and they can help more. They said also felt it gave them time to assist residents in prevention of accidents or fires, and they cited things like the assistance to individuals who want smoke alarms changed and those kinds of things that they would have the time to do that. They also felt that having a chief dedicated to the community was extremely important because it provided a contact point for citizens with concerns. In other words, there's always someone you can go to, and they know who and where that person is. They also felt that it was in a standalone fire department with its own chief would provide better support to the local firefighters by handling administrative tasks that are currently assigned to line people, and lets them do more of the firework rather than a lot of the paperwork that they felt that they might be assigned to. So that's a basic report of the, and I hope if somebody speaking here on the deal, if I've misspoke in any way, then they can make that back. But the recommendations that I put together and forwarded to Director Tompkins was bizarre. But also number two is to meet with CAL FIRE and attain a cost analysis of providing comparable or better service. Because at all meetings, the cost of CAL FIRE was a concern. And there was a general disbelief that CAL FIRE could not provide service at a lower cost. And since that meeting, I didn't notice anything in the Cambrian today because water rates seem to be the gig today. But there were at least two letters to the editor and one Viewpoint article that expressed concern about costs and expressed the belief that costs would be greater. So many of the issues that, other than costs, that were I think that were presented at the community meetings and the fire department meetings really kind of did center around emotional issues, issues of local control, local knowledge of people, things like that. And those issues are important. Make sure you understand that those are important, but they need to be weighed against cost. And the committee, and I would recommend, my recommendation with the committee was that we get a proposal for fire services from CAL FIRE so that you can weigh some of the emotional issues against cost issues and then and make some decisions. And with that, I'll let Director Thomas.
Merle, that was a very comprehensive report, and I concur with your comments about the content of the meetings. We have a meeting scheduled with the reserves, I believe, in about 14 days. Either employ CAL FIRE or have done so in the past, and to get a sense as to what the thinking is about our going forward. And so hopefully we can wrap this up within the next, I'd say, 60 days and come back with a recommendation to the board in terms of going forward.
Okay, thank you. Responses from other board members? Amanda? Excuse me, Director Rice? It's getting to be that time of day, Dennis.
Is it dinner time yet? I have two kind of specific things. I came to both meetings for a brief time and sat in the back and didn't say anything and haven't talked to any of the directors since then until right this moment. And I first would like to compliment the two of you. You did a very nice job in running a meeting that was, you were genuinely getting the input from the community and providing what you did already know. And I thought they were very well run. So that was the first thing. So thank you for doing it. And I'm glad the turnout was good. That's great. The first thing that I noticed in those meetings was it doesn't seem like the community is even clear on what our fire service even provides, really. So we don't know what the level of service is right now that we're getting. And they may know how much money we're spending, or that's going to be, I'm sure, part of what CAL FIRE will look at is what's the level of service. And my understanding is we can set whatever level of service we would like to have provided, and as long as we pay what that will cost them to provide to us. And then the other thing is about that I don't quite understand. If we go to CAL FIRE, it still is our equipment, it's still our firefighters, and the firefighters would still be the same firefighters that we have now unless they wanted to quit, correct?
Well, what I understand is that we could include that requirement contractually that the personnel that are in Cambria Fire
be, so that would be one question, is about the actual personnel.
Right. They would be housed here. Now, whether or not they could be sent off to the Butte Fire for 21
right.
days, that would have to be a question that would have to be asked.
So, yeah, that would be a question that I have. And then on issues of experts on that kind of thing and what kind of equipment we would need and if we wanted to exceed it. But if we still own the equipment, I'm just curious if there's any kind of policy control that we would still have as a district.
Madam President, may I, if it's okay at the ad hoc committee, may I comment on two things?
Yes.
When they provide a proposal to the board, it is my understanding with my earlier dialogue with CAL FIRE is that they will include a equipment replacement component. Matter of fact, they insist on it. So as part of their cost, it will include that component. Because things need to be replaced. The second question, hope I took good notes. The second question is they work a 72 on and 48 off. I'm sorry, a 72 on and 96 off, which is 3 days on and 4 days off. We work a 2 day on and 4 day off. We work a 48 on and 96 off. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's my understanding that that shift would be adopted. It allows you to run a department with five full-time people versus six full-time people. So CAL FIRE everywhere works. Hope I got the question right. CAL FIRE works, what's 3 days? 72?
Remember the word contracted. And so everything to some extent is subject to negotiation. It's contractual negotiation.
And we have to honor the MOU that we currently have with the firefighters, at least through the end of that contract, correct? So that, and does that, I mean, so that would just be my, what actual effects on the firefighters' schedule and whether we have any control over, I mean, there's some policies that I'm sure CAL FIRE will say that is not a policy that we're okay with, and right. I'm assuming that that will come through in the proposal.
That would come through in the negotiations. There may be they say no, we can't live with that contract provision, right. And if we say we can't live with not having that contract provision, obviously you have a stalemate situation. I think what was of concern to the firefighters most of all was the fact that they technically would have to fall within what the 72 and not necessarily having assignment to a particular station. Yeah, and those are the big points, I think, with the firefighters.
And this is what I had wanted to ask, too. Do you, in your work, which is really comprehensive, and I think you're really off to a great start, but do you have some plans? I know you're going to be talking to other agencies and that type of thing, but from the things that you did collect at the two public meetings that you shared this afternoon, will you be sitting down with someone from CAL FIRE to see, is perception factual, the things that you heard that were concerns? They sound like legitimate concerns. Are they misunderstandings? Are they based on worry? Or are they factual? And if they're not factual, will there be an opportunity to come back and set the record straight, so to speak? You know, sometimes people have misunderstandings, and that becomes a reality. If it's a misunderstanding, I just think people need to know what the actual situation is then.
Well, certainly one of the avenues that we will be taking will be to discuss with CAL FIRE and get a sense as to, again, what they would do and what they would not do, and see if that is, in fact, acceptable to this community. So we would certainly bring that forward in any future discussion.
So you would plan to take some of the things that you've already collected here and actually sit down with them and, first of all, clarify, is it true? Is this the standard practice? And if it is, then we need to know that. If it's not, what is the actual practice? But how will we let the people that have these concerns know of those conversations?
Well, I think that'll be part of our larger report on this.
Okay.
And at future meetings, and we may have another community meeting, another workshop.
Good.
So, yeah, we still have a ways to go on this, but we would certainly want to explore with CAL FIRE in terms of what they would propose to do.
Yeah, it seems like you really are, you know, committed to a very thorough and complete review of this whole concept, and I think people appreciate that. Any other comments, Director Rice?
Just to the timeline, because I know we have a year-long contract with CAL FIRE that's going to be up in June-ish, and it sounds like this process is going to be taking a lot longer than that. I don't know if there's... Are we thinking, I don't know if there's any thinking on direction right now, because it seems to me a hiring process for a chief, I mean, it could take us 4 years to do this. We don't want to necessarily be contracting with CAL FIRE. I'm just...
Any on those two ad hoc committees, any further discussion?
Well, one other thing on that. The contract that we have with CAL FIRE has a 120-day notification clause. So I think that's what... Director Thompson is indicating that by the first part of the year, you need to start be able to make a decision. So that if you're going to go to stand alone, you need to be able to give them that 120-day notice.
Okay, we had no budget ad hoc committee meeting this last month, and so I think no budget. So Okay, then, are there any other reports from the board on other related meetings? Director Rice?
Okay, take a deep breath. First thing is I attended the RAC meeting at the beginning of the month this month, the Water Resources Advisory Committee that advises the Board of Supervisors. I also attended the Regional Water Management Group that morning. And just a couple of things from those meetings. The county really is, the county staff is working really hard in their new water. They have a new, under their public what is that called? That reorganization, they talked briefly about that. And Courtney Howard is the new head of the Water Resources Division of the Public Works Department for the county. And Carolyn Berg is the head of the sub-regional work on the SGMA plans, which is those new groundwater management act, the new groundwater management act, sustainable groundwater management act that was just passed last year. We're not subject to that right now because we're low priority basins. But so Carolyn's the one that came and gave the presentation a little while ago about about the grant, I think. What did she give? She came and gave a presentation from the county. And Templeton is looking at doing a 200-acre-foot conjunctive reuse project. They talked briefly about the additional Prop 1 money that's coming through, something like $43 million for our area, which is like three different counties. It's a very large area, but... and the new engineer that's in the Water Resources Division is Mladen Bandoff, who has been working very closely with Bob on the grant and the groundwater our groundwater management plan that we're working on. So it was good to kind of get updated on those items. And I just wanted to say that anybody who's a wine person might want to know that this harvest year was a very bad year. Usually you can get 5 to 6 tons per acre on grapes. And because of the drought and the reduced, they got a lot of folks. This, the person who's the ag representative at the RAC, it was not that much of a digression. But they were good meetings, and I enjoy going to the RAC meetings. There's always something new to learn, and you know we get reports on the reservoirs, which doesn't really affect us. But I get a better understanding of what's going on in the countywide, and sometimes even further. The other report I have to make is I attended the California Special District Association annual conference. They just got back last night. It was very, they do breakout sessions. There were two keynote speakers. The one on the first day was a very good speaker talking about change and the assumptions that we make and the kinds of things you can do to help change happen. He gave some very good examples of when you're not ready for change, when you're not looking forward, but you're instead looking back and basing things on backward assumptions. You get a situation like Sony, who had the Walkman. Everybody calls it a Walkman, even if it's not a Walkman, right? Even if it's not Sony brand. They also had licensing rights for a lot of content, and they had the distribution, and yet they do not dominate the market anymore because they missed the opportunity because they were looking backwards. He talked about London and 1905, their 50-year plan included, what are we going to do about dealing with all the horses and the excrement of the horses with all of the population growth we are expecting, not seeing that about 5 years later, cars were going to be the way to go and horses were going to be gone. So when you plan looking backwards, you can end up not taking advantage of the opportunities available. It was the keynote the next day, which was sponsored by the SDRMA, of which Vice President Clift is a board member. The speaker was a hacker who came and talked about computer security.
And let me say this. Do not ever open a PDF that somebody sends you unless you know for a fact they sent it to you. Because he showed us live what can happen. And he was very specific. He specifically targeted a specific person at a specific place. He showed how autoresponders can... It was fascinating. Talk to me later. We don't need to digress into it. It was a fascinating talk. And several times during the demonstration, the live demonstrations, he said, okay, now this part is a little bit illegal. Don't do it because you will be the one to get caught. So his message was not avoid the internet. His message was people misunderstand where the dangers actually are. And so that was a really fascinating talk, and I'm glad he has. Anybody in the public that wants to, they have for almost every single breakout session, there's a PDF of the PowerPoint show that they did. No, that's an okay. It's not emailed, so you're okay. You can go to guidebook.com and search CSDA, and you can download all of those. You can download all of those presentations that were provided to both board members and staff during the conference. And I will forward the ones of the ones that I went to. I went to one on fiscal health that was really interesting, that talked about the different policies that you need to have in place and the kinds of things that are changing in that arena. And I'm very thankful that I was able to go to this conference, because I'd be darned if I'd want to reinvent the wheel. And there are a lot of districts that are talking drought. That was the first one I went to, was about drought and the changing legal things that are going on with water supply and the Groundwater Management Act and all of the different... For a person like me that's a bit of a policy wonk, it was a fascinating discussion, and there were a lot of folks there focused on the drought and lack of water. I talked to a couple of folks from a district in, I want to say, Tehachapi, who they actually, every Thursday, they go out and they find people. They had 70 people this time that when they went out that were watering on days they shouldn't water. But they also provide 250 gallons per connection per day. So I don't know how that's cutting back, but we are in this community very used to using very little water, and I think that was the lesson that a lot of folks, they're still trying to get their brains, wrap their brains around, is how much water do we really need to be using. They actually have these informational brochures are actually really going to be, I'm looking forward to reading them. I have not had time. But all the different funding sources that are available through the state water resources control board, and there's online seminars, little plug, online seminars for board members, including you can do your ethics training that we have to do every 2 years. You can do it, your compliance training through the on-demand webinars through the CSDA website, because we're members of CSDA. You want to look through any of my materials, please feel free. This is my newest toy. I did have a nice time, and it was full of lots of really good information and lots of people with good ideas and resources. So
very good. Thank you very much. So I think that concludes then the report. We have some requests for public comment on 6B, and the first in order is Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
On how to get the word out, because people are saying all around town they had no idea that this workshop was going to happen on water rates. So I would suggest checking with him. The second is somebody made a comment, not 4 units free anymore. I want to repeat, all water is free. I pay for 4 units to be served to my residents, even though I only use 2 or 3. So I would really appreciate getting credit for the fact that I'm paying for service for something I don't even get completely at this point. Use that as an assumption in your water rate policy.
I really want to know what your assumption of 70% of 2013, on what is that based? How do you come to that conclusion that if you stick with whatever number you do, how do you come to the conclusion that that is a good usage level for this community? Please be explicit about that assumption. If you are using $250,000, and thank you for catching my mistake in the production of the well, I forgot to use the word thousand. But if you use $250,000 a year for water and wastewater each, then you said if there is extra revenue, it will not be to a cash reserve, but rather to maintenance. And a big question comes into my head. What maintenance of what? If it turns out that the emergency water treatment plant is inadequately funded for the operation, which some of us have claimed from the get-go, then might the revenue from regular water use be funneled into that, an area by which you will determine whether the thing runs? Are you assuming for rates that we will get out of stage three? Are you assuming we will just run that plant? I need to understand what assumptions are going to be made by the board about how we provide a certain level of water to be used for the community and flushed down the toilets to be used then through the sewer plant and again then by the wastewater treatment plant. Because if we aren't flushing down to that sewer plant and it's not flowing out there to those poor birds who are shitting in the water, I agree, Director Berenger, you didn't use that word, right? No. But be explicit, friends, about your assumptions. I will certainly write you an elaboration. And in your little itty-bitty CIPs of urgent necessity, which we've heard for a long time,
okay,
by what criteria? And I've asked this, Madam President, as you well know, many, many times over the past few years, and have never gotten a public policy by the board statement about what constitutes a CIP. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure you will rush into that in the very near future if the rain doesn't deflect our attention.
Very clear. Thank you.
President Robinette, if I might, I think the issue of money that isn't spent and whether it goes into reserves or not, should be addressed as part of the reserves policy that we're going to be putting in place. So those revenues, excess revenues, if there are indeed any, and how those are spent would hopefully be addressed as part of a reserves policy in what we do.
Thank you.
And just to reiterate again, no money that is collected in rates can be used for anything else outside of water and wastewater. It was the other way around for so many times, but never do we use water or wastewater monies for anything else. And I think it's illegal to do so. So it stays there. The rates that people pays for water and wastewater, nothing else.
Very good. And thank you for the clarification. Next on public comment on 6B, Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, Tina Dickinson. I think from both the fire and the water issues, the proposed rate increases and the meetings with fire, or for fire changes possibly, is that the community really has not been involved enough. You may have had a couple of meetings, but how can real questions be answered in an informal setting? They can't. And to have six firemen show up with in regular clothing and not their uniforms, from CFD Fire, or was it a common? My understanding was this from the CCSD Fire Department they showed up. But then how does CAL FIRE have a fair, how can they fairly answer any question or be there to even listen to what's being said so that they can then form some fair answers? I can tell you this from my own personal experience. I, 2 or 3 months ago, made a call to the to our CCSD fire department pretty soon. Three firemen come out from the back, and I was told the chief wasn't there again, that he would be there on Tuesday morning. Now, I called CAL FIRE. I got someone to answer at the Fire Station 10 here in Cambria. I asked them, do you lock your doors? And they said, lock the doors? No, only if everybody's gone. I was told by our CCSD fire crew that day that they went for, and what kind of call, plus the graphs that I also have show that. As far as water, I have to say, I think it's too early. We don't know what we're going to be getting for water, rainfall this season. Do we go then back to 95 gallons per day? What if we get just tons of water? I asked Director Rice about this. That's not being factored in. And I would ask if I could have one more minute or 30 seconds, please. Thank you. Is that for those of us in the community who do try extremely hard to conserve, and I mean big time, and many of us, the few of us that come up, we talk about how we conserve so much, then to be treated in this way with this new fixed 80% of 2013 and a new before, and I would also ask Council to have bring to the next board meeting a review of the Brown Act. That should be done every 2 years. I would ask that you do that, and also that you touch upon the requirements of Prop 218. We're entering into that, and I think that the board needs to be made well aware of what those requirements are. And what that law states.
Thank
you very much for the extra time.
Next on 6B, public comment, Laura Schwartz.
Hello. Do I have to press a button here? Yes.
On the mic.
Okay, I'm on. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyhow, thank you. Because there were three ad hoc things, and I was going to speak on the water one. But going backwards, when you talked about the water rights, and I watched on the TV the other night, too, about giving the other communities looking at their nacimiento rights. And just to keep money in the bank, I would make sure that if we do have some rights that I understand that we do, we keep them current just in case. Just in case. That's one comment on that. The other one, on the fire department, obviously I have my opinion, but today it showed the contrast to me on the emotional side, because when we gave Captain Bitto that award, I think everybody in the audience was almost to tears just because of the heartfelt that he felt for this community and what he'd been doing for us. And then all of the officers in the back of the room, they showed up for him. And then we had the report from CAL FIRE, and my word for that was adequate. So there's a contrast on the emotional side to be thought about. Okay, going to the one that I was going to put in place, then you're going to have possibly an automatic 5% increase on that. I brought it up at the meeting that I think we should also have an audit of that amount of increase, just to keep all of our fiscal responsibility in place, because I still had questions on the expenditures here, because there was two things that I wasn't totally clear on, was the allocated overhead and then on the wages. Okay, I want to make sure, I would like to see to go through this whole thing line by line again and make sure that some of the allocated water overhead is not from another department, okay, because that's happened before from different departments. And I want to make sure that it's only for the water in the sewer, not for EWS, not for anything else. And even on the wages, okay, how do you break out the wages? If somebody's working on EWS, how do you do that? So fiscal, I'd like to see it broken out and just watched very carefully and audited when it comes up for more increases. Thank you.
Thank you. And next on public comment, 6B, Jerry Wood.
Jerry Wood, Cambria again. on the this is for the ad hoc committee on fire protection. I'm very glad to hear that you're going to make the effort to contact those other jurisdictions, because the four that I provided to you, there, two of them are have had CAL FIRE and now trying and getting out of it, and the other two rejected them outright. So you've got a good, because we still own the building, we still own the equipment, we still have to maintain it all. So when you do get, if and when you get the any amount from CAL FIRE, please compare labor costs of the CAL FIRE thing with the labor costs of our current fire department. So you're not comparing it to the total budget. So you're comparing apples with apples. And I would respectfully request that at the when you finish all these meetings and everything, that you would have at least one more ad hoc workshop to kind of summarize it for us people that have that are deeply involved in this issue. So if there's any misunderstandings or something, we could get that ironed out before you made any presentation to the board. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is all the requests we have for public comment for item 6B. So I would like to do this. It is late, but still it gives a little time. Actually, I'm going to check with legal counsel. Mr. Greshams have been waiting patiently to comment on an item that's actually under regular business, and he really does need to get back to the office. And we probably should have tried to get you back even much sooner. So the question is, can we, at this point, come back on the consent agenda after we take regular business about the groundwater management plan that I would like? Will it help you at all this late in the afternoon? Can you get back to the office and feel? I know you'd like to get back to the office.
Yes, it certainly would. I really appreciate your making this effort.
All right, then I would like for us to do that. 9B, yes.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm going to have District Council Tim Carmel introduce this, and then Bob can comment on item 9B.
Thank you, Madam President. This item is to consider initiating the drafting of a groundwater management plan and subsequently its adoption. It's a very preliminary step intended to specifically schedule two special meetings that will be needed for public hearings to comply with the water code. I can briefly go over the process itself, and I think Bob can probably add substantially to that if you have any further questions. But ultimately, the action we're looking for is just to pick two dates for special meetings, one in mid-October, you'll see that in your staff report, and one in mid-November.
Thank you.
So real briefly, I'm going to give you a very short overview of the process.
All right.
If you choose to receive it. The process is initiated with extensive noticing to consider a notice of intention to draft the groundwater management plan. It's followed by some fairly intensive public participation meetings and workshops that we're planning on scheduling in between the time that the board actually considers the matter. The draft of that groundwater management plan will be posted on our website. It'll be posted on the Department of Water Resources website. We'll receive comments throughout the period during which it's being drafted, consider create that comment into the staff reports and into the management plan as appropriate. Ultimately, you'll come back in November for a special meeting where we'll consider actually adopting the plan. And that's going to be a two-step process because it's required to be adopted by ordinance. So it's a pretty procedurally intensive sequence of events in order to get this this plan adopted. As you know, the reason why we're adopting it is because it is a condition in our Prop 84 grant agreement. It's an oversight that I will certainly accept blame for, but that's neither here nor there. We still have to adopt it. So the timeline that you're looking at is pretty truncated. It's a real quick timeline that'll comply very specifically with the code. But it's an attempt to get this done fairly expeditiously. And I did want to add that we currently have a groundwater management plan. It's quite outdated. It's a 1980 groundwater management plan. But it's a very thorough plan. And since that time, as you all know, we have accumulated an enormous library of really relevant good materials that will enable this to be done very efficiently and comprehensively. And we're lucky to have Bob. Bob's doing this in-house. This would normally cost $30,000 or $40,000 or more. And I know, candidly, Bob started that process because there's little doubt that we have to adopt a groundwater management plan. So we're sort of in process moving through the various components and trying to put them together. And Bob's just done a phenomenal job. I don't know how this man gets all of his work done, but I've watched, and he's really just to be congratulated. And that's the process. Bob can get into the nuts and bolts, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. And I would certainly second what you just said, for sure. We do appreciate what you do. And I'm sorry this has come this late, but why don't you go ahead now and talk to us, Mr. Gresham?
Sure. Well, thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. Tim did a great job of just covering the basics on this, and I don't think I have that much to add other than I would just mention that the there's two types of groundwater management plans you might be hearing about, and this one is commonly referred to as an AB 3030 plan. There was legislation in 1992 that established how you do groundwater management plans. Our 1980 work actually had a lot of those elements. It was kind of, it wouldn't surprise me if they were looking at that plan when they developed this legislation, quite frankly. But regardless, we are going to make sure we are dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, and following the right procedure in getting a groundwater management plan up to current legislative requirements. So that being said, I think that the main thing that we're after with this agenda item is to select the dates. And it's important to us that we determine particularly the first public hearing date. And that's where you you pass a resolution of your intent to develop a groundwater management plan. So that's kind of step one. And we have two dates listed here in the staff report, October 13th being the earliest, and October 16th being the latest, as kind of a range of dates for you all to decide upon. And then there's a second public hearing. We have that as a earliest date of November 12th, the latest date being the next day, November 13th. And that's the truncated process that Mr. Carmel was just describing. So if we could get some direction on particularly that first public hearing, that would be very helpful to us at this point in time. So I can go into more detail, but I'll stop here unless you have further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we, as we progress, of course, we'll need a motion on that and give you guidance. We have now then a request for public comment on 9B, Tina Dickinson.
Thank you. I'll just make this really brief. In the groundwater management plan process, the guidance for adopting it, item number four, I brought this up before, processing the landowner protests. Protests must be in written format with signatures and property descriptions under 10753.6 of the code. Validate the names and property descriptions. Have those water rights holders, the stakeholders in the basins, have they been notified yet?
Finish your comments.
That's pretty much what I want to ask.
Okay.
Have they been notified yet? Because this is the process to go through. Okay?
All right.
Just a simple yes or no.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Gruber's saying yes.
Yes, Mr. Carmel?
Again, the process hasn't been initiated yet. This is a very preliminary step. The next process will be to provide a duly noticed public hearing, at which time you'll consider a notice of intention to draft that plan. It's not until you actually pass that notice that the process begins. At the point in time that that's done, all appropriately individuals that are affected by this that statutorily require notice will be given notice. In fact, I believe we plan on going a little bit beyond that. But I should note that those that are affected in this case are only people that reside within the district.
Thank you.
Reside within the district? But this is our basin plan, our groundwater management.
I thought you were finished with your public
comment.
Well,
I thought I was too until that reside in the district. Okay, I'm going to have to, I'll look into that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your response, Mr. Carmel. Okay, so that closes public comments on 9B, and so it's board discussion.
Yeah.
On the item.
It's the dates somewhere between the 13th and the 16th, and I just have a personal preference for the 14th or the 15th. I have conflicts on the 13th and 16th.
Hmm.
And maybe I'll add one more thing. I had ex parte discussions with Mr. Gibson, or actually we ran into each other the other day, and he said that he offered any assistance you might want from his staff to help preliminarily review those things. So if, you know, he doesn't want to interfere, but what he has offered is that, you know, if you have some drafts you want to run by it and it's checked ahead of time, it might speed the process along. He knows that we're a very small, you know, we were saying we're a very small thing and we have one guy. And if it costs us money, maybe it should cost us money. I actually think you know more information, you can get it done quicker and cheaper. But just the offer was there that if you want to run things by the county staff, they're welcome to, or he offered, whether he can back it up, I don't know, but he offered to have us do it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I would comment on that, too. You know, the county has been very forthcoming with this whole grant process and things that we have been working with them, and so certainly any help they can offer is going to move this along, hopefully, as fast as it can.
Madam President, we will take advantage of that, and I plan on incorporating them into the process and making sure they're partnering with us because, again, we have a great working relationship with the county staff on multiple levels, and we're going to continue to do that. So,
yes, I think we're quite fortunate. Any other discussion on the item? No discussion. Are we ready for a motion?
Can I discuss a little bit more?
Yes.
We definitely are going to, after we get information from Bartles and Wells, we would like to have a workshop with real numbers. People can actually look at numbers. And that conveniently fits in the same time frame. Perhaps we can have a board meeting that covers this administrative thing, yes. Let's say between 4 and 5, and then we can have a workshop at 6 and, you know, have everybody that's interested in both issues around.
That was my thoughts too.
Suggestion.
I don't want to hit you guys with an extra board meeting, and that would be the only alternative regarding the rate study. So staff and I have been talking about this, and it's a very good point. If we can incorporate in that second agenda item into this meeting, if it's not a problem, or no. Have it in afterwards, we'd have to agendize it two separate ways. If you have two separate meetings, it has to be agendized two separate
right.
ways.
The second one would be an ad hoc, not necessarily full board,
okay.
But for public input, you know, like where we wanted to have, you know, the pre-sell
sure.
or the information to the public. And then at our regular board meeting, it's well scheduled that we can then accept.
We'll make it happen.
The second would be more like a workshop format.
I was trying to coordinate the two things at the same time. We have a board meeting, and the board adjourns, and then the ad hoc would stick around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we
for
can
public
do that.
Input for.
I'll reach out if you guys can determine a date on the first one for the October guidelines between the second, 13th, and the 16th. I'll reach out to Alex and say, okay, are you available?
Great, thanks.
So we're still talking about the date, okay. Director Rice?
I like that idea. The reason that I would argue against it has more to do, because I would like to have more people there, frankly. But I don't know if we did it on the 16th, if that gives Alex enough time to put together the final presentation for the 22nd, which is the date that we're supposed to have the board looking at it. For approval,
right. So I'm thinking more like Wednesday. It doesn't have to be the 16th.
But
it could be the 15th.
It's either the
Wednesday.
13th or the 16th.
No,
you're
no,
not
it's,
saying the 14th.
It's between.
No, it's
between.
Any date in between.
It could be 14th, 15th, or 16th.
I see.
14th looks good.
I misunderstood.
To me.
Okay, so.
I'm suggesting the 14th for this particular agenda item. That's up to the. I would
okay,
like
so
it
you're
close
suggesting,
to the evening so we can double it up.
October 14th and then maybe November 3rd.
I have a 12? Conflict on the 14th.
Okay. About the 4th?
Mm-hmm.
How about the 15th?
15th works.
How's the 15th looking? 15th going once.
In the afternoon?
15th. Okay. 15th? I move that we have the board meeting that's required to consider initiating the process in preparation of a groundwater management plan on October 15th at 4 p.m.
Second.
Okay. Are we doing the second public hearing, the November 12th, in the same motion or not?
Okay, let's take a look at November for me.
Why don't we just go ahead and vote on that, and then you can discuss the other one.
All right.
So the 15th at 4 p.m. is the motion?
Is the motion.
Mm-hmm.
Who seconded it?
Well, Director Rice, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion from the board on that date for the first public hearing? Hearing none.
Good.
No further discussion.
We have to make sure that Alex can come if we're going to do the rights thing.
Right. So we'll take that offline, but that's just a suggestion. So
but that's a possibility you could work on to see
that's
if
the
that
reason
coordinates.
We did it. Yeah.
Irregardless, we need to set a public hearing.
Yeah. So we're setting this.
Yeah. So on this, if your rate ad hoc can also follow
I
that,
see.
That's good.
So that'll
but if
be
not,
in,
we're
got
still
it.
On
right. That'll be
for this document with the
has the potential because this is only about setting the hearing. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you. I second it. I should know what the motion is.
Okay. Let's have a roll call.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Vice President Cliff?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion carries 5-0 on the first date of October 15th.
I move that we have our second public hearing on Thursday, November 12th at 12:30 p.m.
Okay, and the other one was 4 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we're trying to see if we can move it.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Okay, so 12:30 then on November 12th, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none?
At 12:30?
Yeah.
12:30.
Yeah. Long lunch.
2:30.
Yes, we're okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to raise my rate from 75 to 100, though.
Oh, why not 500?
No, not 5.
I'm sorry, that's not on the agenda.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm punchy, it's late.
Okay.
It's all my fault.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on then November 12th at 12:30. No further discussion? Okay, roll call.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Cliff?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. So we have our dates and times, and motion carries 5-0.
And that's the second date is to do what?
It's to actually initiate the adoption, which is a two-step
initiate
process. We're going to do it by ordinance, so that'll be introducing the ordinance, and
got
then
it.
At the regular meeting in November, you'll adopt, hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gresham,
thank
for
you very
staying.
Much.
You
thank
may
you
certainly
very much.
Go.
I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so now, point of order, Mr. Carmel. We're going to go back now and finish our meeting today while it's still the 24th. So my question is, now that we're in regular business, do we have to go to A, or can we go back and not forget consent agenda because we have one item pulled?
No, I think we go back to 7C and move through that and then go to 9A.
And then finish up with our 9.
How about I move that we approve the consent agenda A, B, and D?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. No public comment has been requested. Any further discussion on it? Okay, let's just do a voice. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sounds like it passed. So now we're to item C on the consent agenda.
My request is I appreciate Patrick putting this together. I don't know where he gets the time either. He must be, Mr. Gruber must be secretly doing tons and tons of work for everybody over at the district because there's a lot of work that's getting done. This purchasing policy, though, it seems to me, I really don't want to rush through it. There's some changes that are fairly significant, especially ones that would affect local merchants that we give a special nod to that would have to be eliminated based on the federal policies. And it does say in here that, because the first question I had, well, can we just have it be that these items are specifically for anything that gets spent out of federal funding? And it looks like that was kind of, that option wasn't pursued because the regulators might not find it adequate. I'd like to know what other districts do. Plenty of other districts get federal funding. I'd like to have a purchasing policy that reflects Cambria goals. And if ours are in line with what the feds are for all of our purchasing, I'm not talking about for the money that comes in from federal funding, which we are hoping to get more of. But I would like to hold this over, table it for the moment, and either have the budget committee look at it or look at it more thoroughly in some other way, hopefully at a committee level, and then come back with a recommendation. Not that this isn't adequate for and doesn't meet the qualifications we need for any money that would come in from federal, but I also don't necessarily think that things that help our local merchants and our federal policy really should be applied to all of our spending.
Director,
we can't make money.
Behringer?
Yes, I would. First of all, I don't know what I don't want to table something if it's going to hold up us spending any dollars that we get in the door in the next 6 weeks. But I'm very sympathetic with your point. I would defer to legal counsel, but I'm pretty sure I know what he's going to say. But Mr. Carmel, could you comment on some flexibility here?
I guess my only comment is I know this originally arose in the context of the SAFER grant, and if it's going to slow the grant process up, and I frankly don't know the answer to that question, I'm sure Mr. O'Reilly does, then I would suggest we should go ahead and do this now. But other than that, I don't see any reason why we can't hold it over. We'd also want to look at the issue as to whether they're required to be consistent throughout, regardless of whether federal funding is involved. It's just an issue I'd like to look at in case it bears on your decision.
Mr. O'Reilly?
You actually have those funds in-house now. And so if we delay adoption of this policy, we may not be in compliance with federal regulations. What I'd recommend is that you adopt this policy and then direct staff or direct. Okay, this is not, I don't think it's going to impact, you're going to see any impact on the local community of this policy.
And about our other purchasing procedures that are going to be changed by this?
Those will be changed.
This is why I pulled it. I personally am not comfortable just going. I understand we have funding. We want to buy equipment that we need probably desperately. We have money that we would like to spend, and I understand that. I'm not comfortable just wholesale taking and changing our policy on purchasing based on what the federal policies are. That's just my personal feeling on it. If I got a recommendation from a subcommittee, if I had a better idea of what it would mean impact-wise. I mean, that's why I pulled it. I'm not comfortable with it as it is right now. I don't feel like I've had enough information on it.
Director Behringer.
I move that we adopt the revised purchasing policy as it stands and refer the Budget Committee to review additional change.
Explanation, fellow Irishman, satisfactory in terms of this particular issue at this point, and I would second the motion that we approve the policy and then direct staff to look to see how we can maintain our local procurement if there needs to be such an action.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we approve this as submitted. Any further discussion? Director Rice?
Thank you. I appreciate your expressing your reasoning on that. And I am the kind of person that if I have information that makes me feel more comfortable, I will change my mind. And I'm comfortable supporting it as long as we have.
Then I'll General turn it Manager over to the District Gruber? Council. Yes, ma'am. President Robinette, this is a consideration to schedule public hearing on October 22nd, 2015 to consider a proposed rate increase. Tim, anything else?
Literally, this is just to schedule the public hearing. The protest hearing under Prop 218 for our regular meeting in October 22nd. It should be noted, and it's in your packet, that the notices actually were sent out in early September, I believe, in order to comply with the 45-day notice requirement under Prop 218. And I know that the notice itself requests a 10.37% increase, fairly significant increase. The various elements are identified in the notice itself. And again, this is simply to set that set the public hearing date itself. Of course, you have some leeway to discuss substantively some of the issues if there's a desire to do so. That's pretty much it. I will note that the increases are dictated by the franchise agreement that we have, and that they're required to be consistent with what's known as the rate increase methodology. Sometimes I know they provide. Tom Martin in the past would provide a professional opinion, essentially analyzing whether this is consistent with that rate methodology. If there's a desire to have that, I suggest that you direct staff to seek that out, because I don't think they intend to provide that at the time you consider this next month. Mm-hmm. So again, I'd be glad to answer any questions, but the action we're looking for today is simply to set the public hearing for October 22nd.
Okay. Before discussion, we have no request for public comment, so board discussion. Director Berender?
Yeah, I was surprised to get this notice in the mail, the fuel's going up, coming down, and everything else, and I was a little disappointed to see this in the mail. I know it's a procedural issue, but, my constituents were concerned that they got, and it says CCSD right on the front, and I didn't even know about it. So other than my disappointment with that particular thing, I move that we, unless you want discussion, I move that we schedule a public hearing for October 22nd, 2015 to consider the proposed rate increase.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, it's a motion. Second. It's been moved and seconded that we approve this. And any further discussion? Director Rice?
In the franchise agreement, which I don't have here, I have looked at that, the rate. Let me say this. I looked at it years ago, and I'm sure that it hasn't changed since they're still using the 1994 methodology. I'm not sure that that's a very valid methodology. Is our franchise agreement require us to approve them going through a 218 process to increase the rate?
No, you have discretion. The rates are set by you. They're your franchisee. It's your franchise. It's your service that they're providing.
Right.
So if you disagree with that rate increase, then you don't have to adopt it. I would suggest that if it complies with the rate-setting methodology that's specified in the contract itself, mm-hmm. That you probably can't make the findings that you would need to make in order to deny that rate increase. It can't be, in other words, it can't be a visceral
right.
reaction.
Right, well, because, and no, I understand, and there's a reason why the methodology is set up the way that it is, and I urge anybody that would like to go find it. It's not hard to find. You just have to be very specific about what it's called, and you Google it, and you can find it. And it's a very complicated methodology that includes all kinds of things, like how do you factor in the franchise fee they have to pay us, and how do you factor in a certain amount of profit that they're allowed to make. And I mean, all of that stuff is in there. It's just not, in my opinion, as a person who deals with numbers all the time, that great of a methodology for determining whether or not our rates compared to what it actually costs them to provide the service for the entire town. And it concerns me that this came. I had the same exactly the same concern as Director Berender. It says the notice is intended to inform you that Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors we'll hold a public hearing. And we had, it was that this town has and this board has in terms of trust, in my personal opinion, individual opinion, and I don't know how the other directors feel, but is when we go around procedures that are supposed to happen. It may be minor, but we set it for the date that it's on the thing that's already sent out that says it's from the board of directors approved to have a hearing already, even though we didn't already do that. It bothers me that we don't say, I'm sorry, you didn't go by the procedure. And I think that's where some of the trust ends up happening, the mistrust ends up happening, because we screwed up, let's just kind of, and then try and ignore it, and just without actually acknowledging that this isn't the way it's supposed to happen. And maybe it's the way it happens. I don't like it.
If I can respond, you still have discretion to say that you're not satisfied with the process as it's taken place, and to say, no, we're not going to set it for that time, and to tell them to re-notice. And as you know, Tom Martin pretty much provided that service and was extremely competent at moving through the franchise requirements and 218 process. And I'm sure they're going through some bumps. It's no excuse, but I did want to mention that. But you have discretion to say no, start over again. And I'd also note that you have this discretion to look very closely at this rate increase. It contains some components that I've looked at. There's a reference to Prop 18 or AB 1826, which is an organics program that actually only applies. It doesn't kick in for a few years, and it only applies to commercial enterprises. I'm assuming that you'll get some material from the garbage company that explains with more specificity the basis for the rate increase. Based on what I'm hearing today, I know staff will ask for it, just so that we can anticipate that there'll be some questions.
Well, I would urge voting no on setting the hearing, but whatever way the board goes, I will support. I think that having more information at the very least, but I think that if we want to build the trust of the community, we have to acknowledge that this isn't the way that this should have been done, and new personnel or not. When I make a mistake, I don't like to own up to it either. Nobody does. But let's do it right.
Well, what happens if we let the new person there know that we are feeling a little bullied about here and that we won't have it, and that we are not ready to make a decision because of the way we've been treated? So do they still come get our trash?
The service will be continued regardless of how you act on this application.
Okay, well, maybe we want to make
it. I've worked with them on a commercial basis and a private basis. I needed a new trash can. I get it the very next day. They say, oh, we're not delivering that day. Oh, we'll do it anyway. And they're just really, really good. And I'm sorry that Tom's retired, because I'm sure the leadership is what it does. But I don't want to give a financial impact on them. We can get the message to them some other way. So I think it's moved and seconded. And I'm ready to support it.
Yes, we've had discussion. Any further discussion?
Well, you know, the only thing I'd like to say is that we've benefited a lot of things from the garbage company, too.
Maybe
this
we
community,
can.
The community has.
And we still pay for a lot of green waste removal to somebody else. So
I know, but they've been good providers and good service people. And I don't think that. Okay, so there might have been a mistake or something, but, you know, I don't know that you beat up.
I think that really, because, of course, that was very tongue-in-cheek what I said, but that's not like me at all, as a matter of fact. But I can see the points made here, and it would seem that the proper thing for us to do is to pass this motion and invite the new general manager or whatever that person's title is at some time in the future to be able to just come and give the board just a little update and come to a board meeting so we can welcome him is really what we need to do.
I think that's a good idea, but I think it'd be good to perhaps invite him for the 27th.
Director Rice?
No.
President Robinette?
Aye. Okay. Motion passes 4-1. And we'll invite him to come and spend some time with us on the 22nd.
And can we get the methodology numbers, please? if you don't mind, President Robinette, if we could direct staff to get that additional data prior to the meeting so that we can...
How they came up with their 10-point whatever?
Yeah, because they have to do this methodology thing that they have to plug the numbers into. That's how they get the outcome, is they have the numbers. So it should already be completed at the garbage company. Should be no work except calling them and asking them for it.
We can certainly contact the company and see what they have and ask them to provide as much information as possible.
And if they don't, then they don't really have a rate study.
That supports this.
Okay. All right. So that is concludes our regular business, and we now need future agenda items discussion.
Madam President.
We have no public comment request on item 11, and so General Manager Gruber.
Follow-up to Director Thompson's request last month is in October. We'll be bringing back an administrative policy relating to grants and how that process should work so we don't have departments unilaterally or arbitrarily seeking grants. It has to be approved by the board. And a full disclosure of any financial impact. After talking with Chief Lewin, we really would like to bring a alternatives back to you regarding the SAFER grant. In other words, the board agreed on a specific amount, not to take any money out of general funds. Those were the two conditions. And we would like to give you a cafeteria plan, if you would, of three options on what we can do with that money. So when I say I want to bring the SAFER grant back, it's okay, we can get three firefighters at $10 an hour, we can get one at this, or we can get two. And we want you to be involved in that process instead of unilaterally making that.
That's a good idea.
Those are the three things that I have, Madam President.
All right.
That's going to be a busy meeting.
Director Barney.
Yeah, I have one other thing. I kind of discussed this offline with one of the other directors. And I think we need a policy of how we communicate and when we communicate to the public. I noticed a press release went out in response to, I don't know, a New Times article or something. And if it's not an emergency publication, we should have some kind of policy where potentially even only one other director review it or something. It just seems sometimes we're sending things out a little bit too much in haste without any review. It's just, I don't know, it's not really an agenda item necessarily, but if in time it becomes an agenda item, but the president starts thinking that it needs to be, it's something we should look at.
I move that we consider putting together a ad hoc committee with a specific purpose to look at correspondence policy related to public relations
and website,
general manager and website.
Website postings and so on and so forth.
So
should everything go up within 5 days?
Correspondence and public communication policy.
Madam President, the only problem I see with that is when misinformation is printed that's detrimental to the district.
Which we can argue after we decide whether or not we're going to have a committee.
Right,
that's the
yeah. So if we bring this to committee, so if somebody says, I'll be careful, if somebody prints something that's absolutely inaccurate and our constituents are reading it, That was the only one time that we printed something that was inaccurate, and it was inaccurate from the standpoint of 19 million gallons versus 13 million. 13 million was produced, 6 million went to the mitigation water. But if you committee this thing, you know, and the media keeps writing inaccuracies about the district, then it's going to be more problematic.
I'm talking about making a policy so you don't have to come to the board all the time, so that there is a policy in place when that situation comes up. The policy would include something.
Or we could just have the president or vice president review a press release. That would be the easiest way and most because
I've made a motion that we add to the agenda an ad hoc committee.
We have a motion. We don't have a
correspondence
second.
Policy.
We don't have a second yet.
I thought you seconded.
And accuracy and fact and truth. We all do know that it's important to get rumor or misinformation that's really confusing to the public out and corrected as soon as possible. And I would say that but on the other hand, timeliness is your issue. And do we have maybe the president or maybe the vice president at least is aware and says yes.
That
I
support.
So we could talk about that. We could talk about that. But for now, I think we could do that.
Without a policy, we're just going to end up. That's what I'm saying. We should have a committee to look at that policy. Then the policy will be in place. Do we have that discussion? does the president have to review a press release before it goes out? That is a policy. Seems to me that would be a good discussion to be having.
With presidents, probably myself and others, we're in the loop. I mean,
that needs to be added to the next agenda. But before I tell you what that item is, let me take a little bit of personal privilege and read a letter. And the letter is to President Robinette and to the Board of the Community Services District. Dear President Robinette and Board, I have always believed to be an effective public servant, one must have a long-term commitment to the office one holds. I find for reasons of personal obligations and plans which will require a move from Cambria, I can no longer make that long-term commitment. I'm therefore resigning as a director of the Cambria Community Service District. My resignation will be effective October 1st, 2015, a replacement of my position. It's just a matter of personal things that I have to do.
Well, we certainly all understand when any one of us has those things that need to happen. I mean, it's a surprise.
That's why I couldn't second your motion.
I love you, Merle. Thank you.
Well, this is a shock. And this isn't easy and won't be easy. But I think everyone here, for each and every one of us, at any time that that's the need, we're 100% with you to do what you need to do.
Well, that's not... Oh, yeah.
It is. With regard to this, because I'm still kind of in shock, what are you saying, October 1st of this year? Yeah. Yes, you are. I know you are. Okay, then.
That gave you time
to be thinking. And we have had these boards, have had these circumstances where we will have people.
That's
how I got here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have, and Merle, so we have...
Maybe I can provide you with a memo tomorrow or the next day, and based on that memo, you can either call a special meeting or we talk about how to move this...
We could look at what we've done before, and if nobody has anything to add to it, that's the process that's in place. We'll follow it.
Well, and there's requirements to post notices of vacancy and to do certain other acts that we'll have to initiate,
okay.
But... I'll get you something quickly so we can move through the process expeditiously.
Yeah, we'll need
And I'll
that.
Coordinate that with you, President Robinette.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
We also will have to get a new vice president for at least the last part of the year.
Yeah, so we'll have to move along. All right, we have then no more business on this today and the agenda, and so...
If I can add one thing, I wanted to acknowledge that today is Administrative Services Officer District...
Happy birthday to you, and cameras are rolling. Happy birthday.
And the 30s are the most difficult decade. We all know that.
It's a new decade? Whoa, decades are big. No.
No.
He's
no.
30. Every birthday is simply an anniversary of your 29th.
Yes. Okay, so having no further business, meeting is adjourned.